Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 175 of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today's episode is a little different and a little special. It's actually going to be the last episode for me in terms of producing the show and appearing regularly. But don't worry, the show's not going anywhere. Neil and Nick are working on rebooting it, and the show will be back in a few weeks with mostly the same format, maybe some new voices. But don't worry, the show will go on without my regular participation. But since this is my last episode, what the heck, I decided to make this episode pretty much for me. I'm sure segments everyone out there will enjoy, but the order is going to be a little different. But I hope you like it. So starting things off, we're going to start with a bonus segment all about the NHL playoffs. That's with myself, JP, and Donald. And after that, we have a listener mail segment. That's with myself, Neil, Zach, and Nick. Following that, we have a Bloodborne bonus segment with Alex, Zach, and myself. And right after that is our final bonus segment, all about the 10th anniversary of the Doctor Who reboot. That's with myself, Nick, and Amanda. And ending the show, what the heck, we have one more game of Jeopardy. That's with myself, Zach, Neil, Andy, and Nathan. Enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson, and today I am with JP Corbin.
Hello.
And Donald Terrio.
Hello.
And it is time to grade these guys' Smash Brothers performances.
There you go. No, let's not do that.
You don't want to do that? You
know, I would prefer to the less to be said about that, the better.
You don't want to just open up and share some feelings and discuss progress?
Oh, I've got a lot of feelings. I'm just not sure I want to share them.
Can you say most of those words on this show? I mean...
Earning the explicit tag.
Yeah, we do have the explicit tag, so you can say anything you want, but that's fine. We'll talk about what we're really here to talk about, and that is the NHL playoffs. As you know, if you've listened to Connectivity before, which I imagine you have, from time to time we do these NHL focus segments. We did one about a little bit after the Winter Classic, I'm gonna say, or before maybe. No, it was after, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it was before the All-Star break. Kind of reviewing the season as was. Things kind of played out, I guess, for our respective favorite teams as they kind of were at that time.
About what I expected.
Yeah, I know that the Flyers were hanging in there for a while trying to scrap, you know, to make it in the playoffs, but
they
they're no Senators.
They did pretty impressively considering they had no defense.
Right. And once they were, like, out of the playoffs, I feel like they played 10 times better. Like, they beat a lot of good teams.
The last 2 months of the season, they were almost unbeatable against teams that made the playoffs, and they couldn't get a win against, like, Carolina and Buffalo.
Exactly.
You guys suck at tanking, although it helps you got 18 loser points.
Oh, yeah, a lot of overtime and shootout losses, things like that.
Lots of shootout losses. The Flyers, since the shootout was introduced, are the worst team in shootouts.
Whoa, really? Wow, I know the Kings were, like, exceptionally bad this year, and I know that a lot of speculation is that's why they missed the playoffs, which I guess so. I mean, they were only out by a few points.
They were the last team out, right?
Yeah, win a few shootouts, and maybe you kind of pull yourself into the playoffs there, but I'm very glad they're eliminated. I have no goodwill towards the Kings. Happy to see them out.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I know. Weird. It's not like there's any recent history that would kind of explain that. But I'm actually really excited about this year. Not even so much like for my own team being in it, but just for all like kind of the like fresh blood and new faces that are in the playoffs that haven't really been there the past few years.
I mean, I think our teams did about what we figured, but there were some surprises elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's really exciting. A lot of Canadian teams, except just I feel like there's one that didn't make it, I'm pretty sure. But
two, technically, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Edmonton, I don't even count as a team.
Edmonton's not really an NHL team.
Yeah. Well, as long as Toronto wins on Saturday, that's all I ask for.
What's the percentage shot that you guys have to get the first pick?
9%.
Bad. 6.5 for the Flyers.
Wow. It's not bad, actually. It could happen.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping for some David Stern-style rigging of this thing, but I know it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
I think it was Florida last year. I doubt that was rigging, so we'll see. Maybe it'll be Edmonton again.
God, so they could drive another talent into the ground.
Yes, it would be impressive if they could ruin McDavid.
Then they should get some kind of league award for that. let's go kind of go through the matchups here, and we'll kind of review the teams that are in each matchup and give our prediction. As is usually the case, we'll start in the Eastern Conference, and let's go ahead and jump to the, I guess they finished top seed overall. And that is the New York Rangers.
Yeah, they won the President's Trophy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Up against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
And when we're recording this, that first game just ended just now.
New York
Rangers
won,
winning 2-1.
Yeah. Closer than I thought it would be, but that New York.
It
really
wasn't that
us.
Close. That score really overstates the Penguins' performance.
Yeah, and the Rangers in general, I feel like are a good defensive team. Once they have that kind of lead, I feel like they can really just clamp down. I'm surprised that the Rangers moved ahead this season like they did. I kind of thought last year. I mean, they made it to the Cup final, but.
That was unexpected.
Really,
that wasn't. They weren't the President's Trophy winner last year by any stretch.
And they had to come back from 3-1 down against Pittsburgh.
The Flyers took them to 7 games. I mean, they didn't get in there easy at all.
Right, and I kind of thought they'd be more like the Devils team that we saw a few years ago that played against the Kings. I guess that was 2012. Just this team that kind of just got hot at the right time, but really wasn't like a built to contend for an extended period of time. I thought
the 2010 Flyers.
There you go. Yeah, another. You have a great example. So I expected them to be kind of middle of the pack this season, but that obviously did not end up being the case, and they've actually been very good. Meanwhile, the Penguins barely made it into the playoffs. Yeah, had to win their last game on the last day.
Same team, because freaking Boston couldn't seal the deal.
Yeah, I know.
And they had to beat Buffalo, so really, you kind of figure that Pittsburgh would get in at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Especially once the game before Buffalo actually sealed, which is so great. They sealed up last place. So they really didn't have anything to.
Buffalo was actually really going all out on that. I mean, even if they won, they were the worst. So they could just go all out. It was a home game for them, too. They really had something to play for.
So that was Boston. There was just no way they were going to make it in, considering all that. So, what do you guys think here? I have New York in 5 games.
That sounds about right.
I'm going to give Pittsburgh credit for still having 2 really good players, and I think they can take New York to 6, but they'll bow out in 6 games.
I mean, that's a banged-up team. They've been playing poorly recently, and you need more than 2 good lines to succeed in the postseason. I mean, they could get to 6. They're Pittsburgh, but I'm more with Scott here.
Yeah, and isn't Letang out for the all of the season, all the playoffs and everything they ruled?
He's out, yeah.
Yeah, got a bad concussion.
The Penguins for a long time toward the end of the season were playing with 5 defensemen because they didn't have the cap room to bring up another one. I mean, that's a tired team that has, been playing its worst hockey of the season lately. They limped into the playoffs, so yeah. I really don't see them doing much.
Yeah, I am exactly with you there. I don't know what the deal is with that team. They just always seem to underperform. And unfortunately, you can't really blame it on Fleury this season, as has always been the most exciting thing to do, like, the
Fleury's
past few years.
Fleury's probably been the best player in the team this year.
I'd say so.
Arguably.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had one of the best years I've seen from him, but the team in front of him hasn't done much.
Yeah, I agree. So let's go ahead and jump down then to that same bracket there, and let's take a look at the Washington Capitals versus the New York Islanders. Kind of interesting that Washington is where they are. I expected a little bit of a rebuild period here, at least in a stretch where they wouldn't maybe immediately show gains from bringing in Barry Trotz, the previous coach of the Nashville Predators, the team we'll talk about in a little bit. I was just interested to see how his style, his like defense first style, would gel with guys like Ovechkin, who I don't even have ever heard the word defense. But he's done well, and the team. I mean, the team has played great all season. Holtby has been very reliable for them, and same. I mean, Islanders as well. Another kind of surprise team this season. I feel like the past couple of seasons they've sort of scraped into the last spot, or maybe like second to last spot to get into the playoffs, but. Never really made a big splash, but they've looked great this season.
Yeah, they were looking really strong at the start of the year. They sort of tailed off just as the Rangers started getting hot.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. They may want to go out early just so they can finally get rid of the Nassau Coliseum.
Just be out of there.
Exactly.
Or go out on a high note, make them play games in the Stanley Cup final. Make everybody come to the Nassau Coliseum one last time.
Yeah, that is pretty good. I know. I don't know that they're looking forward at all to playing at the Barclay Center, but
really anything's a step up. Really,
yeah, it's got to be an improvement.
They can play at our local arena here, and it'd be like a sidestep from the Nassau Coliseum.
So for this one, I have Washington in 7.
Yeah, I'm going 6 again with this one. I just think, based on what we saw in game 1, I think the Islanders, I think they can solve Holtby enough that they won't have to take it to the limit.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, New York did win that first game. What were you going to say, JP?
I was just saying, I mean, this is a hard one to look at. You know, these are two teams that I think are kind of here a bit unexpectedly, but they've played very well. Yeah, I kind of want to say seven games because I think they're a pretty good matchup. I would probably go Washington just because I think they've even if they haven't had the most success, there's a more experienced team that might be able to cope with the playoffs better.
Yeah.
But I could see it going either way.
Yeah, that's how I felt. I just this is probably one of the hardest ones for me. I just couldn't really pick a winner. So then our other first place team, division winner, were the Montreal Canadiens. And now they are going to be locked into a battle with, sudden best team ever, the Ottawa Senators.
Meteor in four.
Meteor in four.
Donald's a big fan of this matchup.
Yeah, there's no winning here for Donald. The Ottawa Senators, what is it, like in February, they were 20 points?
15, 16 points out or something.
Yeah, the largest same-season comeback in NHL history, largely on the fact that they got a hot goalie for 24 games.
Yeah, Andrew Hammond, the Hamburger.
Come out of nowhere, you know? Yeah. He's how many people had even heard of him?
He come out of nowhere, but he became, a sensation. I mean, the whole, throwing hamburgers on the ice at Senators games and just everything. I mean, it was so exciting to watch them, get back into it and actually be able to pull it off. And secure a seed. That's really good for them.
I have a friend here who, despite, living in Pennsylvania, is for some reason an Ottawa Senators fan. I've never been able to figure out why, but he's been extremely excited.
Well, I imagine. The Senators farm team was in Binghamton for quite a few years, so I don't know, maybe he's from that area?
No, he's been, he's been, when he hasn't been in Pennsylvania, he's more from Ohio. So yeah, he's fans of weird teams. I've stopped trying to understand him.
You have the Canadiens who, just kind of cruised along all season, right around, the top of the Eastern standings. Price is going to
another strong goalie. Yeah. Price is the runaway Vezina.
Yeah. And possibly Hart too. I've heard a lot of conversation there. So a good matchup. I think the Senators are going to keep the good times rolling, and I think they're going to take it in six.
I had Montreal in five just because Hammond has looked shaky in the last few games. If he's going to keep giving up four goals a game, Ottawa's not going to put four a game past Carey Price.
That's true.
And I've also got, I think I've got three suspensions in the series.
Well, Subban somehow avoided one yesterday, which I can't believe. But
well, it doesn't help when Ottawa's coach is literally saying, "Hey, if we don't suspend Subban, we might take a run at him."
Yeah, that was kind of crass. Yeah, I guess is the word for it.
Self-defeating.
Yeah. What about you, JP? What do you have?
Ottawa has been so hot lately. I mean, Donald's right. They've cooled off a little bit toward the end, but they've still been playing really good hockey. And they played well against Montreal in the regular season, but I still think Montreal takes it, though, probably in six, maybe seven games.
And then our next one, our final one in the Eastern Conference here, another one that I guess I had a little hard time picking, and that's the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Detroit Red Wings.
Game one.
It's another series that you just I wasn't sure either of these teams were going to be this good.
Right.
Detroit, always finds a way to get in, but, I think they've looked better than I expected them to.
Yeah, in this Steve Yzerman series.
The Yzerman Cup.
Detroit seems to be they've lost Franzen probably for good because of a concussion, same way sort of the way Chris Pronger went out, and they've gone to another goalie. I don't know where they keep finding these guys, but
right.
But Tampa Bay's offense is just so high powered that
Stamkos.
This is really going to be Stamkos' time to shine. I've actually got Tampa going to the conference finals out of the Atlantic, so. They're going to win this, but it's probably going to be seven games.
That's so funny. That's exactly what I have, seven games. And I do have Tampa getting to the conference finals against the Rangers. So we are right on par there.
I don't know. I think, Tampa, I could see it happening quicker than that. I think it could be six, but I would take Tampa with just the offense they have.
Sure. All right, well, let's move over to the Western Conference then, which has been kind of crazy. So let's take a look then at, we'll start again with the highest seed in the Western Conference. That is the Anaheim Ducks, inexplicably. And they are against the Winnipeg Jets, maybe also inexplicably. The Jets were a lot better this year than I expected them to be. I think a lot of people thought the Stars were going to make a big push this year, and Winnipeg was still going to be the outside, and they kind of like flip-flopped. Like, Winnipeg was actually very good all year long, and Dallas just couldn't get going. I mean, it doesn't help that, you know, Sagan was out for a good chunk of time, but still.
That Central Division was absolutely insane. I mean, 99 points would win you the President's Trophy some years, and now you're a wild card crossing over?
Yeah, I mean, that division, yeah. I mean, that's exactly...
Yeah, Winnipeg, this is going to be Winnipeg's first playoff game since I was in elementary school. And this is probably one of those series that the home team wins every game. Unfortunately, that does mean Anaheim wins in seven for me.
Mm-hmm.
That atmosphere in that arena is going to be something else for that series.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to watch game three, the first game at Winnipeg. It's going to be insane.
Yeah, but. Because Anaheim was like 38-1 in one goal games this year. So they've got something when it's close, and in the playoffs it's usually close. So that's why I've got them
winning. Winnipeg's a great story, but Anaheim's just too good.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take Winnipeg in seven. Anaheim to me is this team that's always great in the regular season, and they just can't get it done in the playoffs. It doesn't help that you've got Bruce Boudreaux coaching them, who historically did the same exact thing with the Washington Capitals. So I just don't see them getting it done. I think they kind of flame out early again.
Yeah, but I mean, I can see that. I really do, but I think Donald's got it right. I mean, the whole home team winning every game, because I think Winnipeg's going to play up at home, but I mean, I got to take the Ducks.
Yeah. And then the next matchup there in that division is the Vancouver Canucks against the Calgary Flames. Calgary Flames, what the hell? where did this
Johnny
team come from?
Hockey.
Yeah, that's all you need. Really, all they have is that top line, producing like crazy for them. But that's been enough to do it. And I love it. They're kind of like the Leafs of a couple of seasons ago, or the Avalanche of last season. They just defy all advanced statistics, to just beat the odds and get into the playoffs. And I mean, they've been good.
Everybody wrote them off when Mark Giordano went down the All-Star break, who could still probably win the Defenseman of the Year trophy. And I don't know what it is with these guys, but I really think they can probably win this. And the last three times Vancouver and Calgary have met in the playoffs, it's gone to seventh game overtime, and the winner has gone to the Cup final.
There you go. in this one I do have Calgary in six games. I think it's going to be fun. I'm really excited. I'm disappointed that every Canadian team, with the exception of Winnipeg, I guess, is like playing themselves, because that means quickly all this great, good feeling about all these Canadian teams finally be back in the playoffs is going to be like cut in half. But I think Calgary takes it. They've just been a good story, and I just can't see Vancouver pulling it off.
I mean, the what I hesitate with Calgary, I mean, what I said about Pittsburgh, you need more than two good lines to really succeed in the postseason. Well, Calgary probably doesn't even have that. I mean, it's a great story, and they're playing well, and it's Vancouver, so, you know, that's there, but I still have a hard time seeing them get out of it.
Yeah, I've got Calgary in Game 7, and Game 7's going to go to overtime.
Nice. So Game 8.
Game 7 overtime is always fun. Unless it's your team, and then no, it's very less than
yeah
team.
Exactly.
Can we not go there, please?
It still hurts. So let's jump over then to the Central Division. A juggernaut, just sort of like last year. I mean, it's just a lot of good teams there, and everyone seems to keep getting better, which is scary. So the first matchup is the St. Louis Blues against the Minnesota Wild. The Wild
going on right now as I'm watching it.
Yeah, just started. Yeah,
while we're playing this.
Yeah, the Wild were up 1-0 last time I looked.
Still are, yes, with about six left in the first.
Okay. The Wild, started the season very poorly, and then they got a good goalie in Devin Dubnyk, and all of a sudden they were a good team again.
Because we all knew that he had that in him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't help he was playing in Edmonton and, what, four other teams in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Edmonton has a way of like really destroying a goalie, really. I mean, it's like that's... Well, they destroy everybody, but really, goalies...
Yeah. I mean, same with, like, the Sabres and stuff like that. I mean, bad teams just crush goalies.
I mean, the Sabres, at least for a while, had, you know, had Miller when he was good. I mean, a lot of it was just... Edmonton's just been all over... You know, I don't know. But
yeah,
anyway.
That's a good point. Yeah, and then the Blues, I mean, kind of just same where they were last year. I mean, just a good team, a good physical team, that I don't like, but that's neither here nor there. And yeah, I mean, they just kind of cruised along, and luckily for them, the Nashville Predators sort of just fell off the face of the earth the last 2 months, and they were able to snatch up the division title and get a first round matchup with the Wild. Not that I think that that's necessarily a good thing, because I've got the Wild winning this in six.
I'm not sure that's that much better than a matchup with Chicago right now, the way they're playing.
Yeah, I've got the Wild. Actually, well, my original bracket was St. Louis in seven, but you know what? I'm going to throw an audible here. I honestly don't trust St. Louis's goaltending. The fact that they had to bring in the corpse of Marty Brodeur for a few games. I'm going to flip it to Minnesota in seven and see if we can get some love from Billy Berghammer.
There we go. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, I think Minnesota, I mean, has been playing well lately, and yeah, I trust their goaltending a lot more than St. Louis the way it's gone this year.
Yeah, I mean, St. Louis didn't decide a starter for the playoffs until, like, the day before the playoffs started. So, yeah, that does not bode well. And then let's jump to the last matchup then. That is the Nashville Predators against my Chicago Blackhawks. Predators, another, like, surprise team. There were a lot of those this year.
This, to me, is the most fun matchup to watch, because I think these are two really excellent teams. I would say whoever wins this series probably go into the finals out of the West.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. I mean, I think Nashville could definitely win it with the team they have. They're so strong defensively, and Pekka would be a serious Vezina contender in most years, if not for the way Price is playing. They're finding ways to score, which I guess Peter Laviolette will do for you. So they are,
as someone who's like watched a lot of Nashville Predators hockey over the past few years, I mean, when the Predators came up on the schedule, a lot of times I just didn't even want to watch the games because they were just such a boring team in the past few years. And I mean, yeah, great defensively, but didn't take any chances, just kind of snuffed out all play through the neutral zone, and then just sort of like, you know, would score on these just sort of weird opportune plays that would just sort of pop up. But it was very slow, it was very calculated, and it was just boring. But that is not what the case is now for Nashville. I mean, they are a fast-moving team. I mean,
Lobby doesn't play that kind of hockey.
No, but what helps is they still have that, like, world-caliber
defense. Right, I mean, you got, I mean, goalies, Weber, so. and then even, like, Seth Jones recently, yep. And they keep adding to it.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, Rene has kind of regained some of his form from a couple of years ago and had an excellent season.
Yeah, I mean, he did fall off at the end of the season. Right, I think his save percentage for April was, like, under 900, surprisingly. And Nashville came crashing down. I think they won, like, six of their last 20 games.
That's what would make me give the edge to Chicago. But, I mean, Nashville is capable of getting hot and turning it right around. But, based on recent form, you got to give it to Chicago.
Yeah.
Especially with Kane back. I mean, you get Patrick Kane.
Yes.
You know, that's a whole different team.
That's gotta be Kane! Yeah, and between Nashville's recent form and, well, let's look at game one's in the books there, and Nashville had a 3-0 lead. And then, I don't know where you find these goalies, Scott, but he throws up a 67-minute shutout, and you guys come back 4 unanswered and win it in double overtime. That's got to kill Nashville at this point.
Yeah, right? I mean, yeah, like, they felt so... I mean, that whole, like, arena was crazy at the end of the first period, because they scored a late goal at the end of the first period to go up 3-0, and, I mean, they just, like, seemed in complete control, and then it just, like, steadily, like, fell apart for them. And yeah, Darling was unbelievable. He's actually like a Chicago kid. He's from the Chicagoland area and has played for like a million different minor league teams. And like had a huge, like, just hurdle, like getting to the NHL, but he's been very good. And you know, like Crawford had a bad game yesterday, but Crawford's been great too. He actually tied Price, for fewest goals allowed. And now they're like co-winners of the Jennings Trophy. So, I mean, he's had a really good season too. So it's exciting. I mean, it's good. The past few seasons, especially last season, I felt like the Hawks didn't really have a backup plan in net, and you saw in that LA series that, I mean, LA was scoring a lot. Crawford was bad in that LA series, as was Quick, but neither team had, like, a backup goalie that they trusted, and as you saw yesterday, if things go south, they've got a backup goalie that can come in and really, like, shut things down and give the Hawks a chance, and that's huge. I think that's really what's going to make a difference here. moving
yeah,
forward.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I mean, I like what Nashville's done, but, I mean, you're right. They've really kind of collapsed over time. And, I mean, they've clearly got the talent to play at that level. And this is the playoffs. I've seen teams bounce back like that before, but I think Chicago's so good. And you get the goaltending, you got Kane back. I think, yeah, Chicago.
Yeah, Kane, too, is a huge, he's going to give them a huge swing. Yeah, I mean, 2 assists yesterday and everything.
You
want to like
talk
that,
about rigged lotteries? There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm going Hawks in 6 in this one.
Okay, I've got Hawks in 5, but I'm obviously biased.
I think 6 is probably right, Hawks in 6.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, good talk, guys. If you're listening to this segment and you're enjoying it, why don't you send in your picks? You can leave comments or email us or, heck, tweet us. Why not? In fact, if you want to tweet any of us about hockey stuff, because we will all be watching the playoffs from here on out, I am at OK Soda. The letters OK and the word soda.
I am at Lord Corbin, LordCorbran. And really, what we need more is more NWR people tweeting incessantly about sports. So if you want to join us with them, I mean, you really should.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm at Donald Mick, and I'll be looking for streams since I no longer have cable.
Oh, okay. I've got a website for you that maybe you want to look to.
I had to figure out what channel CNBC was.
Yeah, like USA Network. I don't know what that is. So, all right, cool. Well, thanks, guys, for being here. Thanks so much for listening. And maybe we'll do another one of these as this thing kind of winds along here. So, all right, we'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
See ya. Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson, and today I am with Zach Miller.
Man, I'm in the middle of nowhere.
Neil Ronahan.
What the fuck?
Yeah, appropriate response. And Nicholas Bray.
Hello.
I wasn't going to try and
come up with some witty remark.
Mine was just honest.
I always forget to have Zach go last. Please do that. I don't know why you always just appear first, like, in my list, which doesn't make any sense. It's not, like, alphabet. It doesn't make sense. I don't know.
He's first in your heart.
First in my
heart.
Dude,
that picture's haunting.
Yeah, you guys missed it. Him and Alex did video chat when we recorded a segment yesterday, which you will now hear on this podcast probably later, to kind of break the complete fourth wall here. And Alex was shirtless.
I wasn't wearing pants.
And I saw Zach's junk, so that was good.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
It was in underpants.
Zach, you got naked in front of other men?
If only.
I don't know how I feel about this.
So this segment, apart from Zach's junk, is all about listener mail. We're sitting on the listener mail for a little while. I think some of these date back to like maybe the end of January, so it's been a little while, but what are you going to do? They are timeless.
I mean, you could always send us more because it's part of the reason why we don't
get Yeah, we got like 10 letters
every week. We don't get much.
True.
You can send that shit in to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
I mean, should we just wrap the segment now? Should we exit?
Yeah, right. Yeah, good to see everybody.
Yeah, this is a segment asking for mail.
Yeah. All right, good talk, everybody. Now, Zach, make with the junk pictures.
Yeah.
All right, so let's jump into some listener mail. We've got 4 emails and then 1 tweet to read and answer, and some good varied stuff here. So here we go. This first email is from Kasaki Project, a longtime listener of the show, and I think him and I follow each other on Twitter, actually.
I follow him as well.
I believe we met him at the first Jeopardy.
I think
he was in the first
Jeopardy. Kudos to you. He says, Yeah. I don't know. I kind of just felt like sending you this, but I really appreciate all the work you put into the site and podcast. I've been listening since 2009. It's awesome what you do. Keep it up. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. And then he goes on to say, my friend recently imported a Rosetta and Chico amiibo for me as a gift. Do you have any idea?
That's a Rosalina and Luma, if you didn't know.
Yes. And that's what the question is. Do you have any idea why the name has changed for the West? I assumed she was always named Rosetta in Japan. Also, I hate collectors. I'm cool with people getting all the amiibo, but for God's sake, play with them. They are toys.
Yo, Kisaki Project, we are friends for life.
Nicholas.
Not only were you on our Jeopardy panel, but yes, play with your toys. Damn it.
That's right. Nick, what is it called in Australia, the amiibo?
Blonde head, tall girl, and blob.
Star.
Yeah.
Fat star guy.
Fat star guy. Yeah.
I wish.
No,
Starfy.
Like the name takes up half the box.
Now, I wonder, so, I mean, this is definitely a Treehouse creation, the Lumali, Lumala, welcome to the Luma shop. I wonder what that was in Japan. It's just like Chico Chi.
I like
Chico
the name
shop.
Chico. It's just funny to me. It's like a Mexican star.
Well, I was gonna say,
I mean, like, does that mean anything in Japanese?
And I was gonna say, is that you think why go here because as kind of like it does feel like it's just a Mexican name.
Possibly, I can see that.
Mm. Wait. This is what does Chico mean?
I don't know. Yeah. The loom is.
It means pledge in Japanese.
Pledge. Okay.
It means pledge in Japanese.
They pledge. Well,
it's similar. No, that spelling is Japanese. It's similar. To Chico, which is Chico, the Portuguese and Spanish variation. There's also a Sesco. It's similar to that.
I just know that there's a character in Metal Gear Rising named Chico who I hate.
Good to me. What were you going to say though, Nick?
I kind of remember. Like, I don't know. Luma is sort of, you know, starry and, you know, has like a connotation of brightness and stuff. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's probably why they went with it.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to try to get to the answer. I don't know. Do we know who from Treehouse local worked with Super Mario Galaxy and might be on Twitter?
Jesus.
You guys continue. I'm going to go.
I love that listener mail turned into just like, well, let me Google that for you and then let me like ask my Twitter for you. Like, that's what this segment should be. Just send us things you'd like us to search on the internet for. It probably would have helped if we'd had someone, like this would be a good question for, like, the Famicast, probably, right? They'd be much more informed about this.
Hey, Famicast guys.
Probably.
They, you know.
Answer this shit.
Any of you dudes are listening.
Yeah, answer this on your next episode, please.
Just forward them the email.
Plus, I love it. This
well,
is
it's, not,
it's,
not like Rose, it's not like Rosaline is the only character that they, like, changed the name.
Changed
like,
names,
Toad's
no.
not called Toad in... Japan. It's called, what, Kino something?
Yeah.
What's his name? Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. You know, you're right. The names get changed all the time, so yeah, it's not that uncommon. But yeah, I didn't know that she wasn't Rosalina, you know, universally, so that's kind of interesting to me. But while we're on Rosalina, let's talk about this, because I don't know if we've really addressed this. How do we feel about Rosalina as a character?
I love her.
Okay.
Yeah, she's cool.
I do feel like she's, like, now the most popular Mario princess.
Definitely because she's got, like, she has some attitude.
Yeah. And then I feel like Daisy's a close second for just some god-awful reason.
Good lord.
I hate
Neil,
Daisy.
Is the microphone on your keyboard?
All right. I just tweeted at Bill Trennan asking him why did Rosalina and Luma change from Rosetta and Chico during localization.
And his reply would be, because I said so.
Because
yeah,
I run this
shit.
Probably
be something very trolly. Maybe about the old house. Yeah.
It's my only creative input. I can name things.
Right, I'm gonna...
Neil, what are your feelings on Rosalina?
I think she's a really great Smash character. Other than that, I don't know if I really care that much. I did like playing as her in Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah, yeah.
The story in Galaxy was kind of cool.
Dude, her story in Galaxy was amazing.
That was art.
Yeah.
It was. For a Mario game, shit.
That's the thing. That's initially, I was like not into this whole like Rosalina push. I was like, leave her in Galaxy. Like, I don't need her in Mario canon. Like, this obsession is kind of insane. But the more I think about it, I guess I'm kind of a fan, if only because she does have like the most developed backstory of what any Nintendo character, like at least Mario character.
She also, Yeah.
Seriously.
True.
Yeah. And I like, dude, Lumas are fucking adorable.
And she doesn't get kidnapped every other day. I don't think she's gotten kidnapped yet.
She's pretty badass.
She's been like trapped on an observatory or something.
A lot of the games she's been appearing in, though, are like just games where a lot of characters appear in. Like, I don't know if there's like a huge internal push for Rosalina until they come out with like a standalone game.
Super Rosalina and Luma.
Yeah, something like that.
I'd play that game, I think.
That'd probably be the best way to do another Galaxy game without, like, focusing on Mario.
God, yeah, dude. Maybe that's gonna come out
this
fall.
I don't want another Mario Galaxy game, but if it was like a Rosalina spin-off.
Super Rosalina Galaxy.
Maybe.
Yeah. I like playying as her in, Mario Golf.
Oh,
she's a good character.
Yeah, and I like that she's showing up in things. Yeah.
She's really tall.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I would love to see her, I think, get some more attention and, yeah, maybe her own game, or at least, like, not be a secret hideaway character in a game like 3D World. Like, let her just be available from the start and be kind of part of the main cast. Like, I think I'm good with it. I'd like to see them kind of take that same approach with some of the other Mario characters. I love that she is sort of so developed and had, like, an actual story kind of wrapped around her character.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really want to expand the character, just make a game, like, I don't know, for maybe, like, the 3DS, and you give her a parasol that kind of becomes the main character of the story, and then have that the only thing that she can do is cry and get angry, she uses emotional powers to do, a platformer, so it's like she's starring in her own platformer and she's rescuing Mario.
Sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty
but
good,
she's
Neil.
She's progressing
by crying. I wish they made that game.
Yeah. But she has bipolar disorder, is what you're saying?
Yeah. You know what the tragedy of Super Princess Peach is? Is that it's actually
a good game.
But, like, that story is freaking horseshit.
Yeah. Neil, if you still have your Twitter client open, I'd like you to also tweet at Bill Trinan and send him that pitch and just tell him to forward it to me when he gets a chance. Because I think you're onto something. I like it.
I mean, it's very original. Never been done before.
No.
Instead of tears, they're like meteors or something.
Yeah. There you go. She probably
cries
stars.
How about we have like a god game where Rosalina is like, you know, the god and can destroy galaxies and sort of stuff.
I like that idea.
ActRaiser with Rosalina.
The Lumas are like the Zerg from StarCraft.
You know, like an ActRaiser. I mean, well, that too. That would be pretty rad. But like the Luma could be like the person that like interacts with you in ActRaiser, like the little like fairy thing or whatever. And then you play as Rosalina in side-scrolling stages, and then it's like SimCity when you're outside of it and you're like building space. I don't know.
Fuck, man, we should work at Nintendo. We just saved 2015.
I know.
Who needs Zelda?
We just answered a later question.
I know.
That's how we're going to save Nintendo. All Rosalina, all the time.
It's all it takes. Let's move on to our next question here. This comes from Chris, I guess? C-R-Y-S, Chris? I mean, I guess it's cool.
Sounds right.
Chris?
I mean, I don't think it'll be like when there's a guy named Kai Tim that wrote in. For years, and
Kentucky Tim!
And
where are you, Kentucky Tim?
Yeah, we've been missing Kentucky Tim forever. Maybe he moved. Maybe he's like Louisiana Tim now.
Maybe he's like Connecticut Ryan or something like this Chris.
Change his name. He's up. Miss you, Kentucky Tim. Anyway, so this comes from Chris Christ, maybe Kentucky Tim. Hey guys, we've seen three Zelda games for the 3DS thus far, two being remakes and one being a 2D Zelda. We've seen that the 3DS can do a 3D Zelda experience perfectly well. What do you think Nintendo could do with an original 3D title on the 3DS as opposed to another 2D one? I like this question. I mean, what do you guys think? Like, could they ever just sort of use the now, you know, standard Majora's Mask, Ocarina of Time engine and just make something wholly original for the 3DS?
I'd like that.
They could, but they won't.
Pourquoi?
They could.
Well, why won't they,
because
Zach?
I think the 3DS's time is coming to an end,
sure.
For one thing.
No, it's got like 2 years left in it.
2 years
left?
They
just released a new 3DS.
Yeah,
really? Does it really?
Yeah, but they released the newer 3DS around the same time during its life cycle that they released the DSi XL.
Yeah.
But you can't count from the XL.
No, it's more... No, you're off with your time difference there.
DSi was 2009,
wasn't it? Well, the DS was... Yeah, the DSi was 2009. The DS was released. I mean, we can kind of, when it was worldwide, there was a 4-year difference, which, okay, that's close.
That's close.
So yeah, it's about the difference of the DSi.
Okay.
And even still, when the DSi came out, we were still 2 years away from
that's
the 3DS.
True.
And I'll be completely honest, I will be kind of surprised if there isn't a successor to the 3DS released, by the end of 2017.
It's called iPhone 7.
or NX. I mean, I think that not to just turn this into, you know, everyone's favorite NX nonsense discussion, but I guess in tying it into the question is that I think if they were going to do an original 3D Zelda, they should have been already
agree
working on that. Maybe
there like a some sort of job posting at Grezzo like last year, like they were stuffing up even more. Like surely they weren't stuffing up for Majora's Mask. Like, yeah, am I remembering that wrong?
That might have. I feel like that was longer than a year ago. But I mean, either way, I think you kind of run into the issue where I think that Grezzo at this point, having worked on Ocarina of Time 3D and Majora's Mask, I mean they've been handling Zelda games for what, 6 years at least at this point. 5 or 6 years, they've been working in the 3D Zelda space. I would love to see them, you know, use the engine and the assets that they prettied up from Majora's Mask and make their own 3D Zelda game.
I would too.
I think that would be really cool, but I think you also run into the problem with that, where you would have ostensibly I don't want to say a rookie team, because Grezzo's not a rookie team, but like, not internal
the
Nintendo.
B-team.
Making a Zelda game that would be considered a successor, sequel, follow-up to Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
And unless that game is the second coming of Christ, there's no way that sounds like a good idea.
I don't know. I think they could probably pull it off. Like, they're not going to be left completely alone. Nintendo would be guiding the development. I mean, look at Metroid Prime. That was like a rookie team.
Yeah, but Metroid Prime wasn't following on the heels of
Majora's
Mask.
That's true. They established their own, like, vision of Metroid. It wasn't like, let's make a sequel to Super Metroid.
Well, it would have to be, like, they have the template there. All they have to do is come up with an original hook to make it, you know, fresher.
But if they're using that graphical style, then they're gonna draw comparisons constantly throughout all of development, throughout when it releases to Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. And it's like, I'll be totally honest, I would love to see that damn game. I would love to see Grezzo make a 3D Zelda game. I think from kind of a broader audience and critical view, I think unless that game is perfect, it's gonna get torn apart.
And I honestly wouldn't want to see those assets again.
They would have to.
I thought they would have to make
the characters, the character models. I've seen them all before, twice now. I don't want to see them again.
Yeah. Especially because Majora's Mask was already in its own way, kind of that like spin-off remix version of Ocarina of Time.
And then Master Quest is too.
Right. Majora already cribbed so many assets from Ocarina that it's very glaring at this point. Yeah, you couldn't just reuse the same assets, but.
I mean, unless they do something where, like, they take the base for that engine and then make a whole new art style. Because I think that's where it's kind of, I mean, when I kind of raise an eyebrow and just, like, I don't want to see these poor guys at Grezzo make a 3D Zelda and have it be compared to Ocarina of Time all the time. Like, maybe they change the art style, but use the engine still.
I would prefer it, actually be, like, a proper sequel to that trilogy. Like, make it a trilogy. Like, I would want them to keep the same art style and everything.
That's the problem.
No, but
dude,
they could make new characters. You wouldn't have to reuse the character assets. You could make new assets. Just use the same style.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Then you have Grezzo making a sequel to Ocarina of Time. That's insane.
So everyone hated Majora's Mask when it came out, too.
And that was made internally in Nintendo.
I just don't really see the problem. I think it would be good enough to like put out another game.
I think enough time has passed that you could release a quote unquote sequel to Ocarina of Time and it wouldn't be the end of the world if it wasn't like the greatest thing you've ever experienced. Right? I mean, let's think, like, what if 10 years ago we told you, like, all of a sudden it's going to try and make a sequel to Link to the Past? Like, would you have thought that could have worked?
To be fair, did you hear what people said when they said they were making a sequel to A Link to the Past? A lot of people revolted. Mm. Fortunately, that game turned out to be basically perfect.
Great ass
exactly.
game.
So, like, I mean, you know, that was a sequel to, like, one of the weird games of all time, and they pulled it off.
Yeah.
So, I think it could happen. I guess whether or not we think it, like, makes sense to do, my personal preferences is, like, yeah, I think I'd like to see a 3D Zelda on the 3DS.
I would too, and I would like, I'll just leave it at that.
It just kind of speaks to a broader thing about, like, you know, Grezzo spent the 3DS kind of honing their skills on remaking 3D Zelda games. Like, where do we go from here with them? And I think it's logically, it makes sense to be like, well, yeah, put them to work on a 3D Zelda, but how long is that going to take? I mean, even if they were developing it, unless it's like fast track for this year, which I think that would be insane because they literally just released a game 2 months ago. You're not going to have it in 2016 because, or at least, especially if it's a new 3D Zelda game, it's not going to come out in 2016 as long as Zelda Wii U comes out. And I think that in 2017, at that point, like, I don't think the 3DS is going to be a focus
anymore. I wouldn't put it past them to, if they were going to do it, I wouldn't put it past them to put out one last big title at the end of the 3DS's life. Like, I could
like
see
Skyward
it.
Sword for the Wii.
Yeah.
And that worked out so well for Skyward Sword,
I know, but
didn't it?
Just think, if they're planning to replace the 3DS at the end of 2017, they've got to put something out during the year.
Well, we said that about the N64, the GameCube,
the Wii.
The Wii.
No, but I like the idea. I hope it happens.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if maybe whatever Grezzo's working on next is for a future console.
Mm. Yeah.
Or they're working on a smaller project.
Zelda 2 Remake, baby.
That would be so cool.
Set in the Ocarina of Time.
Oh,
ending.
Shit!
Yeah, yeah.
There we go. Mystery
that could
solved.
Work.
We did it.
Alright.
Alright, let's move on to our next question. And I think this one will work really well with having Nick here today. So this comes from, he didn't really leave his name, but his email address said it was MacVerde. And I believe he is from Brazil. So his question is somewhat kind of in broken English a little bit, but I'll do my best with it. See where we are. He says, well, he starts off right at the bat, I'm sorry for my English. Johnny Metz struggles a lot to read it on RFN episode 411. Well, the secret is Johnny actually never learned to read. We try not to, like, give him a hard time about it. Like, he's a doctor, which makes it even all the more impressive. But we just don't really say anything about it. So, like, MacVerde, it is not on you at all. Like, so I don't want you to feel bad about that whatsoever. Recently, Nintendo left Brazil and left a lot of fans unhappy. You guys know how expensive games are here. With all the new 3DS talk, I was wondering if Nintendo could come back here. What do you guys think about a different approach for poorer countries to achieve the mass market? I'm talking about a 2DS without a cartridge slot, with lower battery, without the gyroscope, without the microphone, a worse screen, and all things you can imagine to reduce the cost. With a specific region eShop that you only get titles after a year of launch and slash the prices after 2 years. Nintendo would solve the problems about high import tariffs. After you take the first hit to buy a 2DS, you will be able to afford to get games to play. I know that that product would not be for me or people who visit Nintendo World Report, but at the same time, I'm tired. I've seen only rich people who throw all their money or just buy 2 games per year on 3DS meetups. P.S. I hope you understand my questions, and I really like Nintendo News Report.
Well, we really like yes. you.
Great, great question. I don't know. Is there a reason for Nintendo to go through that much trouble to, like, develop specific hardware for a region? I mean, is there that much money, like, incentive, you know, to do that?
I don't think that would be a good idea for them to try and make a whole new hardware SKU for it. What I could see them doing, what they should maybe be doing, is putting out just the hardware and forcing people to buy everything digitally, maybe.
Yeah.
Because piracy is the big issue in a lot of those regions, I know. Like, I mean, that's not just exclusive to Nintendo. Like, I worked with someone a number of years ago that I think he was from a South American country, and that when he moved to America, it was like he moved to America when he was in his teens, and that it was weird because he actually had to spend money on video games because all they did was pirate them in South America. Cause that's just what you did. There wasn't an affordable option.
Yeah.
And there was a huge piracy scene because of that, because everything's so damn expensive that you're just going to pirate.
I don't think you're ever going to get away from that. That's an upstream problem, a government problem. Which is very unfortunate.
But right. I mean, I think you're right. I think going the digital route sort of, like, circumvents that and gets around that issue.
You know, if they could put out a Brazilian focused, like, eShop, like, just for them, and, like, maybe, you know, price appropriately, it would be good, you know, good for them. They might make more money off it.
And I'm not totally up on what, like, I think it's Nintendo of Latin America. Like, I think that Nintendo pushed heavily in that area for a while, and I think they kind of backed out of it, which I don't think there was any official reason why, but I would assume if you put effort into a region and then back out of it, things probably didn't go the way you planned. So it seems like they might have tried to fight against the
pirates. It was like way too much of an undertaking, which I imagine it to be.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's tough. I mean, I would feel like horrible to be living in Brazil and be a Nintendo fan and not have the means to like play the games. I mean, I feel like we really take that for granted. I mean, we get upset when like a game releases in Japan and doesn't come here for like 5 months. I mean, imagine like reading Nintendo World and like hearing about everything but having no access to it. It's pretty shitty.
Now, I will say that our Brazilian friend should feel good, and I feel jealous that Brazil has so many awesome dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Because goddamn, I mean, like,
you can't play Zelda Wii U, but you've got a bunch of old bones in your backyard, so you tell me, MacVerde, who's really winning.
I can show you an old bone.
You could go and try and find a dinosaur bone and sell it, and you could then
That's true. If you make a massive discovery and like find a new species of dinosaur, you're set.
Yeah,
because that's going to be super easy, I'm sure. Zach just says it, lying all around.
If you find a new species of dinosaur, email Zach Miller at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Name it Silly Saw. There you go.
Perfect.
There you go.
No, that really sucks. I mean, I don't know like what the import scene would be like there. I think he might have mentioned that a little bit in his email. I'm assuming that's equally expensive.
I vaguely remember this email from RFN. I think it was something like, if they do go to the digital way, it's hard to do digitally as well. There's something blocking it as well. Nintendo like does something. I can't remember.
Oh, like digital's region. Like, was it kind of like how Netflix, like you can't Netflix like outside?
Yeah, it's like a bunch of hoops to jump through, even just to like buy them digitally.
Yeah, right. You'd have to import the hardware and the games at that point, I imagine. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's just a tough situation. But I really don't see them like creating a special like bastardized hardware to just there. I mean, obviously they found at this point like that the juice might not be worth the squeeze. So I don't think that's going to happen, but I hope they find some way to resolve the issue there.
Unfortunately, it doesn't look good now that like they've just completely pulled out of the market. Like they're probably not going to go back there anytime soon.
Yeah. MacVerde, if you want to write back in and kind of explain a little bit like maybe what importing is like there and maybe the struggles with that or even the cost of that, if that's not even really a good option, I'd be interested in hearing more about that, and we can maybe talk more about this at some later date. But yeah, in the meantime, let's start like a Patreon to get you a Wii U and a 3DS.
There we go.
Like, let's put Patreon to good use for once.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next question.
That was a dig, man.
You know, people do good stuff with Patreon, but it's like, I feel for this dude. I feel bad.
Mm.
Well, gonna cancel the Patreon for my cat picture.
Yeah, exactly.
thanks, jerk.
All right, this next question comes from Adam. And the question, or I guess not really a question, it's like just a scenario that we will now navigate. You get a phone call. Iwata has stepped into an advisor role, and you are the new CEO of Nintendo. Outline your strategy. Only you can save Mario.
Drugs.
Drugs?
So many drugs.
Yeah, can you imagine if, like, you were just, like, on the corner and you were like, yo, man, let me get a little Mario. Yo, let me get a Super Mushroom.
I mean, you're already in the state of Washington, Nintendo.
Actually, Super like, Mushroom might literally already be a drug name, the more I think about it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I saw someone on Twitter, I think it's, oh god, I don't remember who it was, but someone on Twitter mentioned about, like, I wonder if there's a strain of marijuana called Samus, because there should be.
Jeez.
And I agree. And Nintendo of America is in the state of Washington, where marijuana is legal, so they should just start growing, man. And name it after video game characters.
The Nintendo World Pop Store. Yeah, and every, like, special, like, yeah, strand is named after Mario.
Or you
Nintendo
got some character. Of that dank Kirby shit.
Superstar.
I need that mother brain. That's awesome. Man. There we, I mean, what else? Neil, do you still have Twitter open? Can you get Bill Trinan back on the line? Because we just saved Nintendo, man.
Outline a strategy. I mean,
So outside of drugs, what are their good options?
Bayonetta amiibos.
Oh yeah, that was your suggestion. Yeah, with every
one
costume.
For every costume she has.
But they can't just be like regular.
No, see the sad thing with that is that they put all this effort into Bayonetta amiibos, and then like none of them would sell out.
I think they would sell. Well, out.
You've just got to make them appear rare, and everyone would want to
exactly
buy them.
Exactly right.
Well, that and two, I think that if you're gonna do Bayonetta amiibos, if you're gonna basically target like the Zach audience, they have to be like, they can't be 3 inches tall. They probably need to be like,
need to be
2
like
feet
12
tall.
Inch, 12 inch figures or something, yeah. You know.
Quarter scale, baby.
Yeah, highly detailed,
just
maybe removable costume parts.
Thick, wide bases.
Jeez.
Rubbery tops.
I guess where they're going now is kind of what I would have wanted. Like, going mobile to me, I think was very important. And I think they're handling it the right way. Like, I like the idea that they're creating specific, like, experiences that make sense on handhelds and or on mobile platforms and don't, like, compromise their current, not necessarily IP, but, like, current, like, library of games, I guess.
Because, like, as soon as they compromise too far, the 3DS is worthless. The Wii U is worthless, you know? Like, there's such a fine line, and they, like, seem to be walking it very well at the moment, but we haven't seen anything like come out yet. What's going to happen in 5-10 years?
We haven't seen anything yet, but we kind of have. I mean, if you look at basically every free-to-play Pokemon game on the 3DS right now, and like all the other kind of free-to-play stuff they've done, I mean, that's like perfect for mobile. I mean, Pokemon Shuffle, like for sure right now, they could just like release that on the App Store and probably do very well for themselves.
Even Rumble,
you know,
World.
That's very much. Yeah, exactly.
And they're both really so fun games too.
They're gearing up for it for sure. So I like that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's tough. I mean, we obviously are very critical of Nintendo at times, but to just kind of step in and like say like, well, what's going to save the company? I mean, I
think there's a multitude of things that you could probably do, and I think that some of the things that you, like. Because you don't want to lose the uniqueness of the company. But I think that they're in a spot where I think Japan kind of controls too much.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It needs to be a Sony of Japan, Sony of America kind of thing.
Because I think that there are smart people in Nintendo in Japan. There are smart people in Europe. There are smart people in America. Out of the 4 people that work at Nintendo of Australia, I'm sure there are very smart people there too.
Yeah, they're all right.
Yeah, don't you see them like every day?
Nick knows every single person. Yeah,
yeah, I see with their PR guy sometimes.
but I mean, like that, there are smart people there, and I think part of it is that just like there's so much control coming from NCL that you know America and Europe and every other region, they can't really kind of do anything without getting endless approvals.
Yeah.
So you're really stuck. I mean, we've seen that kind of rear its head with, I mean, I think that the probably the clearest example of the left not knowing what the right's doing is back when Evo was banned or Smash Brothers was banned from Evo a couple years ago. And all that was miscommunication because, you know, you did have people that clearly Nintendo was trying to foster the esports community for Smash Brothers on Wii U and 3DS. And, like, the legal team or whatever didn't know about that. And we're just like, okay, this is how we always do business. So we're just going to say no.
Yeah.
And it's just that kind of that tone deafness that Nintendo seems to carry on, whether it's through their YouTube stuff or, you know, oh God, there was another thing that was on the tip of my tongue. Oh, no voice chat in Splatoon and just the way they approach online in general.
Yeah.
Like, it's stuff that, like, no one else is doing. And for certain things that Nintendo does, them doing stuff that no one else is doing is great because it's this fresh perspective. But for a bulk of things, like the YouTube stuff, like the way they deal with esports and Evo, I mean, they're getting better with that. And like the online stuff, it's like they're behind the times. And I think if those things weren't an issue, you know, people wouldn't be so dismissive of a lot of Nintendo things. Like there's a big group of people out there that just kind of laugh off Nintendo as a system, as a serious competitor in the gaming industry, and that's because they're not on par with anything that Microsoft and Sony's putting out or even what's on PCs.
Mm. And seemingly purposefully so.
Yeah. And it's weird for me to be like, oh, they need to be more like their competitors because
I have PS4.
I play my Wii U and my 3DS way more than I play my PS4. I don't play PC games. Like, yeah. I'm not the majority. I want Nintendo to keep on making games the way they're making games because out of the past couple of years, the games that I actively dislike that Nintendo put out and like regret spending time on and purchasing is very, very low amount.
Mm.
Like the way they're rolling now, I'm really happy, but I don't think it's sustainable.
No. They need,
we're the minority.
Need more fans, younger fans.
And I almost feel like they've kind of taken for granted the fact that they kind of caught lightning in a bottle twice. I mean, first with the NES, which, I mean, for the longest time, America was happy just to, like, lap up whatever was coming from, like, the Japanese gaming culture. But I think Nintendo lost out of the fact that then America instead of, like, developed its own gaming culture that was, you know, in contrast to what's going on in Japan. And then with the Wii, I mean, that was such a huge success that I thought that they could just... I feel like they just kind of thought they could repeat that with real no issue with the Wii U, and that obviously turned out to not be the case whatsoever. So yeah, I think they thought it would be easier than it really is.
No.
And the Wii, I mean, they kind of got lucky with the Wii. Like, if the Wii had not worked out the way it did.
They also got lucky with the DS and the Game
True.
Boy as well.
Yeah, yeah.
True. Mm.
They got lucky twice with the Game Boy. Pokemon gave it a huge boost at the end of its life.
Yep. Again, another Japanese, you know, centric and focused game that came over here and did well. But at some point, like, you kind of have to...
Yeah, can you imagine that these days, like, the next Nintendo system is coming out and the look of the hardware is completely different from Japan, like you guys had with the Super Nintendo and like the NES as well.
But
like they completely redesigned it to suit the market. And it doesn't seem like it would ever happen again now.
Well, I mean, it's a global market now.
Yeah, yeah. But
then, I mean, I think that...
Even just changing the names and stuff, though.
Yeah, Wii U was a bad
3DS.
Name.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, new 3DS.
Wii U.
Yeah. I mean, I think that going forward, I mean, just a lot of the stuff that even, like, Iwata says and what you hear out of him, just, like, the stuff about, like, oh, you know, we're just waiting for that one big game to get the Wii U or the 3DS, you know, on the map. Like, that doesn't happen.
No, it's certainly not going to happen
anymore.
Like, on
any system. It happened, I mean, let's get real, it happened with Wii Sports, but that's not something that you plan on. That's, as we talked about, that's lightning in a bottle. And I think that as long as Nintendo exists, I feel like they're going to be kind of in this thing where they're scraping to get out of third place, so to speak. And every now and then they'll get lucky, whether by, you know, dumb luck or, I mean, we can say that the Wii was right place, right time, visionary design and dumb luck to an extent.
Yeah.
Like kind of a mixture. It was a perfect storm. It really was.
Actually.
And I feel like.
Sorry.
I feel like that's the way that Nintendo is going to be going forward, is kind of, you know, staying the course, staying around. I mean, yeah, they're making this big thing with mobile. And I think that will either do gangbusters or it will just do well enough so that way they stay alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there you go. How exciting. high note.
I don't like thinking about the future of Nintendo too much because I think it ends with me not playing their games as much because they're not for me anymore.
Very true.
It's kind of sad.
Let's move on then to our final question. This comes from Saturday Morning Mood, which I can only assume is a sex thing. And he says, I'd like to hear...
No, he's talking about cartoons. Saturday Morning Cartoons, Scott.
I get it.
Afternoon Saturday Delight.
Morning Mood. Yeah, that's like the prequel to that song. I'd like to hear the crew discuss why they think Game Boy Advance Virtual Console games are on the Wii U eShop, not on the 3DS eShop. Yeah, I don't, you know, because why would you do the logical thing?
Well, you
I don't
see,
know.
Guys, the Game Boy Advance can't run adequately on the 3DS.
Right.
So they can't do it without, I don't even know what Axel's doing. I mean, I know that the harebrained excuse was that they were able to get the Ambassador games working on it, but those were just like
workarounds,
crappy
yeah.
emulations.
No, they weren't. They weren't emulations. They were actually
right.
Running.
Wasn't it like shifting to DS mode and then from DS mode like shifting to Game Boy Advance mode? Yeah. Like, wasn't it like two layers of emulation?
Yeah. And I think the excuse has been that they haven't been able to get GBA emulation running through the 3DS portion of the system well.
Mm.
Or at least that's like, that's
you know
what
I bet it could
said.
Work on now though is the new 3DS.
Exactly right.
Like it would strike me that the new 3DS has the horsepower, to be able to run 3DS.
They need to put out something to convince me that the new 3DS was worthwhile.
If they can run fucking Xenoblade on the new 3DS, then like you can run Golden Sun.
Yeah,
you can run Super Mario Brothers Advance 2.
I think the,
you don't have to. That's not a very good game.
I think the more annoying thing actually, aside from GBA, is not having just DS games on it, because that poses no problems at all. Like, they've put the Wii titles out in a similar manner to what I assume the DS ones would work as. Like, I don't get it.
No, I think we should continue to play Yoshi's Island DS on a vertically oriented gamepad using the classic controller.
Hey guys,
Pro.
Guess what I was doing? I was playing Yoshi Touch and Go and WarioWare Touched on my gamepad. Within 5 minutes, I took the stylus and I jammed it right through my eye.
You know what they should do? They should get the Wii U to stream GBA games to the 3DS.
There you go. So
perfect.
The Wii U can handle the actual processing and horsepower aspect of it.
Yeah. The 3DS displays it, yeah.
You know what's funny? I would probably play a lot more GBA games on the Wii U that way. I'd be sitting in bed playing the 3DS.
I'm wondering if, it's, too much of a hurdle to kind of, like, technically get it to work, while still keeping all the 3DS functionality, like, in line. Because, as we know, like, the Ambassador games disable a lot of the 3DS hardware capabilities while you're playing them.
Well, they disable all of them.
Yeah, and I also wonder, too, if it's an issue of they've kind of looked at the data. And virtual console games just sell better on consoles versus, like, handhelds. Or maybe specifically Wii U versus 3DS.
Well, I'm guessing that Game Boy and Game Boy Color games sell better on the 3DS.
Yeah, because they're only available there. But, like, just statistically, do Wii U virtual console games sell far and beyond what's available on the 3DS?
Oh,
now, granted, do people really want to download Game Boy games versus, like, Mario Galaxy 2? Maybe not. So maybe the data's skewed in that way, but maybe they just look at it and think it'll get more sales on console, and maybe we want to divert more attention to the Wii U because it's kind of floundering right now. I don't know.
They're incapable of keeping both focuses.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, and I think that, I mean, really, there's not a large team on Virtual Console if there is, there is a team.
They've got a guy downstairs.
Console,
that's intern.
You're gonna slowly work on, the emulation for different systems. It took them a while to even get DS running on Wii U. Like, I remember, like a year and a half ago, Iwata was like, we figured it out! And then it took him a year and a half to actually do anything about it.
Hey, Steve, we're gonna need you to port, Yoshi Touch and Go to the Wii U. What? God.
I guess I'm working through my lunch.
Do it now, do it by next week, come on!
Yeah. Maybe Steve can star in a game with Rosalina.
Steve and Smash Brothers. Steve the intern.
All right, go to the Smash Ballot website.
What are his special abilities, Zach?
Emulate. Where he copies another attack fighter's attack poorly.
He has an attack that launches and then is delayed by 5 minutes.
There you go.
On his down B, he says, "We do not comment on rumors and speculation."
Yes.
Perfect. And his forward B is working for college credit.
Now, what was his up B?
His up B is avoid blame.
No, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work because it wasn't emulated properly.
There's an error.
He turns into a DS screen on a Wii U.
No, that's his final smash.
Oh boy, that's awesome. Yeah.
Steve the intern.
I think we just saved Nintendo again.
Yeah. Steve the intern should be CEO.
Hashtag Steve the intern. Get it trending.
Yes.
People. When this episode goes up, I want to see Steve the Intern out there on Twitter.
Tweet to Trent.
Make that happen.
He's the new generic action figure, man.
Whatever happened to that?
I know.
Like, that was so charming.
You know, he should be in Smash Brothers.
I actually thought that guy was going to show up in like more stuff and it was going to be like a thing, but it was like one video and it was it.
Yeah. I wonder at E3 this year what fan base that Nintendo is going to troll.
Yeah.
The character you've all been waiting for, Captain Rainbow.
Probably Amiibo fans. That's
actually
they trolled
Mother 3 fans twice now. Once at E3 last year, and once at this most recent Direct.
Yeah.
There was a moment when I was watching that Direct that I was like, Mother 3 is coming to America, and then they're just like, the star of Mother 3, Lucas, he's gonna be in Smash Brothers. I'm like, that's still pretty cool, but like, really?
But half your audience
That's
is saying,
you that?
Who? What?
No, everyone knows him from Smash Brothers.
That's what he should have said. Lucas from Brawl. Yeah.
The hit game Smash Brothers Brawl. Lucas.
All right, guys. I think that is going to do it. Thank you so much if you sent in mail in the past 2 months and we read it on this episode. We appreciate it. Send in more, and we'll do more of these, and we will continue to, like, make fun of RFN and Nintendo.
You can do it, Johnny!
You can do it, Satoru!
Send that listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And, yeah, we would appreciate that. And I guess that's it. So, thank you for listening. Right. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello everyone and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson and today I'm with Alex Kalafi.
Hey!
And Zach Miller.
First things first, I'm the realist.
Oh god.
Yeah!
He's dropping Iggy Azalea right out the gate. This is going to be a special segment.
Who dat? Who dat? Z-A-C-H?
I just want everyone at home to know too that Zach has his webcam open as we're doing this on Skype, which is the first time we've probably ever done video chat while recording the podcast. And so just seeing Zach say these things is even better than hearing them. So the world needs to know that, even though you'll never experience it. So anyway, this bonus segment is all about Bloodborne, the PS4 exclusive from Software that just released a couple weeks ago now. And you know, from the developers of Dark Souls and things like that. Oh god, Alex is now joined the video chat and he has no shirt on.
No.
Oh no.
Pants.
Oh god. Oh. I just saw Zach's wing. Wow, this is more difficult than Bloodborne. This is bad. So anyway, assuming I gotta minimize my Skype now. I can't
YouTube. Cannot unsee.
Join the party, Scott.
It opened up. No, I will not. So anyway, this we've all been playing Bloodborne, the PS4 exclusive. We enjoy it quite a bit, more or less. I think Zach is maybe having a little trouble, but that's all right. Well, we'll talk about that. None of us have beaten the game yet. We're still probably, I think Alex is the furthest at like 15 hours, so you don't really have to worry about spoilers in this segment if you're still making your way through it. We're going to talk about the early sections of the game and the difficulty, how it compares to Dark Souls, and kind of what Zach's feelings are jumping in without having played a Dark Souls or Demon Souls game. So let's get right to that. And I do want to start with you, Zach. I can't wait any longer. So you just got your PS4 pretty much right around the time this released, correct?
Was it? I don't know. I don't know how long it's been out.
I mean, the game's been out like 2 weeks. Your PS4. Yeah. Okay. Now, did you mostly pick it up just because it was a PS4 exclusive and you wanted something exclusive to play on your new shiny PS4?
I mostly picked it up because it came with the PS4.
Oh, it did? It did. Okay, great.
It came with that and a digital code for The Last of Us, which I promptly burned.
Fair enough. So jumping into Bloodborne, what have your thoughts been about it, Zach?
It's really hard.
Yes.
But it's kind of the good kind of hard that I like. It's the masochistic kind of hard that forced me to beat Project X Zone and get all of the collectibles in Donkey Kong Country Returns, even though I hated myself for doing it. Once you get to a certain point, or once I got to a certain point, I knew what to expect from different enemies. Right. I knew how they were going to react and how best to approach them. I knew how to kind of lure one enemy away so that I wasn't mobbed.
That's key, yeah.
Yeah. But even still, I'm getting boned by the first boss, the cleric beast. Mm-hmm. Mainly because the camera is your biggest enemy in that fight.
Yeah, that is kind of a hard... I almost wish they had picked a smaller scale boss. Like, I know they kind of wanted to show...
Or put it in
like
a bigger area.
Well, yeah. I know they kind of show, like, the grandeur of the game. And, you know, I think kind of get you to, like, jaw hit the floor right from the beginning.
Yeah.
But that is, like, you get in so tight and so close to him that it is very difficult to really see and appreciate what's going on.
Yeah.
I've heard, and I didn't do this, but I've heard if you don't actually lock onto him... And you just let your camera like free, you know, like free roam, that it's a little bit easier to keep track of. And he's so big that you really don't have to like worry about like missing him.
Yeah.
So maybe try that and the camera will maybe be a little bit friendlier.
But even getting to him is a pain because your entrance point to the city, the central Yarraman or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Is like a mile away. And it's a mile that is caked in enemies. And those two werewolves, especially on the bridge, just gang rape me every time I see them.
Have you found the campfires, the bonfires that are basically your checkpoints?
By now you've probably only found one. I mean that's what lets you go back to the hunter's.
Oh well, those aren't campfires. They're like lamps.
Yeah, the lamps. Excuse me.
There's the one lamp in the where you very first start the game in the ward, doctor's ward. Or surgical ward, mm-hmm. And then there's Central Yarraman, which is right outside.
Yeah.
Okay. My two recommendations for that fight are one, for every single boss in this game that I've played so far, I've played like five or six, the solution to the great puzzle of beating them is either circling, strafing, and stabbing them, and just running away,
okay.
Or it's countering with your gun, and then running away. And
I haven't figured out the counter yet. I know it exists, but I haven't got the time.
So it's like a parry. The way the gun works is pretty much just a parry because you're not doing that for damage.
No, you're not.
Whenever they're like pretty much a second away from hitting you, like when they pretty much raise their weapon, that's when you fire the gun off, and it works on most enemies who are comparable to your size and like kind of bigger. With this specific boss, what you want to do is you just want to be constantly circling him. And then you wait until he misses. Like, he swings his sword thing, you roll to, like, the left or right, and then after he swings, you hit him once or twice, run away, and then wait for him to come to you, circle, and repeat. It's not actually that tough of a fight. I think I ended up beating that on my first try, but partially because I had those Molotov cocktails, which do I ran out of those.
Yeah.
I ran out of those on the werewolves. How do you kill the werewolves without dying quickly?
What you should do is actually skip the werewolves. There's like a second path that you can take to the bridge that actually lets you bypass the werewolves.
Oh.
And it also, you can use that path to open a shortcut that will like shave off like 10 minutes of getting back to the first boss.
I need to explore more is what you're saying.
You do. Yeah. It's kind of hidden. After you like clear out that area, that first area with the big fire and like the big mob of enemies.
Yeah.
When you leave there, you come to like that big, next open, I think it's kind of around a fountain and there's that giant that's like beating on the door and everything. When you first walk in there, if you stick to the left, there's like a pile of like coffins against a fence. If you roll and break the coffins, there's actually an opening in the fence and you can drop down to a new area. And there's a bunch of like rabid dogs there that you'll have to kill. But after that, you just keep going. You'll enter a house with some creepy guys in there. And instead of like going to the top floor of the house, which you need to go to the boss, if you exit out the back of the house, there's a gate that's actually, it's the closed gate if you kind of can visualize it at that old Yharnam like checkpoint where you're always starting at back again.
Oh.
There's the path to the right where you can go, and then there's a gate immediately to the left that's locked.
Yeah.
You can unlock that.
No, I've unlocked that gate. That shaves a lot of time. Sure, that shaves a lot of time off, but I still wind up on the bridge faced with werewolves.
Hmm. So you have gone that way?
Because if the cleric is at the end of the bridge,
yeah,
the werewolves are at the front of the bridge.
Right, and this path like drops you at the middle of the bridge, so you're like past the werewolves.
Okay, then I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
I'll look around. So,
yeah, give that a shot.
Okay.
Have you also gone back to level up?
So I found a mask of something or other that gave me whatever it's called, the ability to level up. The doll comes to life.
Yes, yeah.
So what I've been doing is, because the game is an asshole and doesn't level up all your stats when you level up,
yeah.
I have been farming gold and going back to, without dying, just running back to a checkpoint, warping into the hunter's dream and leveling something up.
That's the way to do it.
It takes forever, but it's what I've been doing.
Yeah, that's what I did too. I guess my skills aren't as quite as sharp as Alex's. Without leveling up, I just could not beat that boss. So I did that. I farmed that early mob by that fire a handful of times, and then kept returning to level up, focusing mostly like on strength, endurance, and vitality. And then once I'd done that a handful of times, then I was able to take down the boss. So
it's a really good game, though. I mean, it's really. It's the kind of punishing that teaches you how to be a better player of it.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah, like, it deaths in that game hardly ever feel unfair.
Right.
And I feel like you always kind of learn from every encounter, both, like, in terms of just enemy placement and traps, and also, like, how enemies act, like you said, and how to best counteract.
Definitely.
You know, their different abilities and strengths and attacks and things like that. So yeah, so I really enjoy it. So that's super interesting. Well, I hope you stick with it and try to take down that first boss.
My wife was funny because she was sitting on the couch doing something while I was playing the first time. And like every time a new monster appeared, I was like, oh God. Like the first time one of those giant cement-handed bad guys found me, I was like, oh shit, he's going to kill me. And he killed me.
Yeah.
But then I got really good at approaching them from behind and doing that... I don't know. You charge up your attack and you hit him, and then you grab him and grab his heart through his back and
the visceral attack.
Yeah, kill him right away.
Yeah.
That's the that's pretty much the counter to a parry, generally, right? It's that like critical hit.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if that's what it's actually called, but when you parry him and then like they fall to their knees and then it goes into that auto scene.
I'm gonna have to practice that.
Yeah, practice with the gun, like, on the early mobs and until you get it. And then, yeah, that's huge because you could do that against the bosses. And when you successfully do one of those, it takes off such a big chunk of their life. Like, that's essential in beating them. Yeah, that's the whole point of having the gun. Because, like Alex said, it's worthless for, like, actually dealing damage.
Yeah.
So just practice on those low-level enemies. And even the giants with the big cinder blocks, like you're saying, just practice on them. And once you feel comfortable with it, like, the game gets a lot easier. I will say that Alex and I were talking about it, and I don't think Bloodborne is as difficult as Dark Souls 2, but I do think the beginning of the game is more difficult than Dark Souls 2. just that early mob around that fire, like, if you're thinking this is kind of a standard third-person action game, you know, Devil May Cry, something like that, like, you probably feel like, okay, like, I can just take these guys down. You know, like, they wouldn't put enemies here that could just easily swarm and kill me. Like, I'm probably more powerful than these guys. This shouldn't be a problem. But that is, like, completely wrong. Like, without a doubt. And I find it interesting that you're almost expected to die at the first boss, because that's what unlocks the ability then to level up, which you, except for Alex, who's apparently God's gift to gaming, you need to, like, level up to be able to handle that first boss. Like, I find it interesting that it's punishing in that way, and it basically at least forces you to play that early part twice, if not more, because I'm sure you're going to die more than twice.
Well, I found whatever that mask of something is before the boss, and that's what let me level up without beating him.
Right, exactly, yeah. What happens is when you see that boss for the first time, it gives you one insight, which then that allows you to
level up. Oh, just when you see him?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what happened.
Right, the mask, the mask of the madman or whatever, that gives you extra insight, which I'm not 100% sure what extra insight does down the road. But yeah, you have zero insight up until you see the boss. Every time you see a boss, you gain one insight. So yeah.
Do you want me to explain what insight actually is?
Oh yeah, sure, go for it.
Okay, so insight is this... it's kind of this currency that you keep pretty much in your game where it builds up every time you beat a boss, see a boss, and then, like, you can also take items that allow you to increase insight. And insight allows you to do things like, I think it opens up the store, I think it has something to do with allowing you to level. Like, there are crucial things that open up by you having, like, 1, 2, or 3 insight. However, as you build up insight, as I am doing right now, the game becomes harder. So say there's a purely melee enemy who is only known for swinging something at you, and he does a lot of damage, but that's really it. Now he actually can get a projectile attack, and now maybe his eyes glow. So, like, once you hit certain points, enemies get much stronger. And the way, go ahead.
I was going to say, because every time I found, like, the mask of the madman, I've just used it to increase my insight, so maybe I shouldn't do that, is what you're saying?
It's you will have an easier game the less insight you have. You probably, if you want the easiest game possible, you don't want to go much further beyond 15. However, when you die in certain situations, you can lose insight, but I haven't died in that many situations, and I've just been using the insight. And in addition to that, my game is not connected to the internet. So I'm playing a completely offline Bloodborne. So now I have, like, 38 to 40 insight, and I'm just, it's still not that hard yet.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm, like, at 17 or 18 right now. So I've already increased mine above that nice, easy setting of 15. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I don't mind it getting much more difficult, but that's interesting. I like that about Bloodborne. I love how much there is to sort of, like, discover and how much you learn just by, like, discussing it like we're doing here.
Yeah.
Whether it's alternate paths, like we just told Zach, or, like, the purpose of the insight. Like, it very much reminds me of playing games back in the day and, like, just discussing it with your friends, like, on the school playground, mm-hmm. and just learning things you had no idea about. It's just so interesting to me. We've made the comparison when talking about Dark Souls before, but to me it's, like, very much sort of recaptures that spirit of, like, The Legend of Zelda on the NES. Like, just so open-ended and just so mysterious. I love that.
I would actually say that the game is more accessible than some people give it credit. Not only does it have the scaling difficulty system, but compare that to Dark Souls 1 especially. Dark Souls 1, you were pretty much just expected to wander off, do whatever you want. Eventually you'll find bosses, eventually you'll kill them. The game does not care how powerful you think you are or should be. The game will make you constantly feel weak. In a way where every time you actually do manage to succeed against the boss, it will feel like a major accomplishment. And in addition to that, Dark Souls is very slower, deliberate, lumbering combat. Intentionally so you'll feel like a knight in shining armor, actually, mm-hmm. and what that experience would really be like. It's a wonderful thing. And then Dark Souls 2 kind of takes that, but it makes it slightly more linear, and then slightly easier, I think, than the original Dark Souls. What Bloodborne is it replaces that slow, lumbering combat with much faster combat that is actually more accessible to someone who likes faster action games, though it's certainly still in a league of its own. Shields are now gone. You can't use shields as you could in Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2. Though there is a shield, but it's kind of like a joke weapon. Instead, what you're doing what you can do instead is use a gun as your left-handed weapon instead of a shield, and you fire it when someone's about to attack, and you can parry and stuff. So all you're doing is you're constantly rolling, dodging, parrying, and stabbing with your melee weapon, and it's the super fast combat. But at the same time, because there's no shield and because it's faster, the game's actually pretty forgivable. Like, the bosses, in my opinion, so far, are not as hard as many of the ones in Dark Souls 1, and even Dark Souls 2 to a certain extent. In addition to that, the Insight allows you to have sliding difficulty that if you use more people to come into your game online and help you out in co-op on bosses, the Insight will go down. But if you're really good, it'll go up.
That can happen? You can do that?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, I think something's got to happen. Like, I haven't done it yet, but like, there is certainly a way to bring people into your game to help you.
Yeah,
it's
almost how it was. It's almost like the opposite of how it was in Dark Souls 2. So there's an item you get. It's a bell, and you use the bell, and that basically allows people to enter your game. So I think if they pass the location where you use the bell, there's something on their screen where they can like click it, and then they join your world. Whereas in Dark Souls 2, they left something on the ground and you had to click it to bring them into your game. So you're basically like opening your game to invite people in. So that's true, Zach. If we coordinated it, because it's not like you can't use like a friend system. There's no way to just say like, I just want my friend to join. Unfortunately.
There's the share play thing on PS4, which I think has actually been used. Or if it's not the share play, it's something else like specific to the PS4 that does allow you friends to come into your game.
Does it?
Yeah, okay. But it's like Dark Souls, though. It's generally just strangers like to wander in.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, Zach, we could coordinate it where it's like if we're playing at the same time and you tell me, like, okay, I'm going to use my bell here, I could come into your game and help you beat that first boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a huge component of Dark Souls. I haven't done much of it at all in Bloodborne. It seems very much like diminished here. Similarly, in Dark Souls was the PvP, which meant in certain areas very frequently people would enter your game specifically just to kill you.
No,
like
nice.
Other actual players. Yep. Yeah, I think there's PvP here, but I think it's much more isolated. It's not as like prevalent through the whole game as it was in Dark Souls. So but yeah, we should mess around with that and give that a shot.
So let me ask you a question about the first two games.
Go for it.
The thing.
Well, three. There's three, but yeah.
Three. Oh, that's right.
Demon Souls, Dark Souls 2, Bloodborne.
So, the screenshots of monsters and bosses I've seen that are coming in Bloodborne look pretty awesome. Like, you know, creature design wise. But I've watched some videos of like Dark Souls 1 and 2, and the bosses especially are like knights. You know, living armor look pretty dull by comparison. Is that true? Because I'm a guy who likes good creature design. So would I like the first two games?
So here's the thing. They are going after two very different themes. This one's like more gothic, more horror. It's
I mean, everything's influenced by werewolves. I mean, that's the whole
right.
Crux
werewolves,
of the,
vampires,
of the story,
everything is in that. Well. Dark Souls, I don't know if I'd call it medieval, but that's, like, the attitude I would more attach to it, like, bosses that are medieval. Like, I think there are still, you're still gonna see dragons, you're still gonna see some crazy-ass shit, like, later on in the game, but it's not as, like, terrifying-looking as the bosses of Bloodborne. However, there is an upside to Dark Souls over Bloodborne, even if you prefer the creature designs, and that while Bloodborne is this cool, dark horror game, it's dark pretty much 100% of the way through so far. It's very similar, gothic backgrounds, darkness, bosses that are fucked up in kind of the same ways. So there's a bit more sameness in having a game as dark as Bloodborne is, while the environments in Dark Souls, in my opinion, are far more varied.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, you get different settings. I mean, different lighting even. I mean, Alex is right. I mean, Bloodborne is pretty much exclusively dark, and then even as you progress, it gets darker because like it becomes night.
do you like travel beyond Yharamn, or are there different levels?
Kinda. It's
or is it one gigantic overworld that kind of blends together?
So
it's all connected. Like you could walk from one area of like the starting point that you're at now, like to the furthest point.
Okay.
so everything's connected in that way. So it all does feel like very much part of the same setting. Like it all feels like that gothic London that you're mm-hmm. seeing now. But different locations within it that, so like the backgrounds and environments serve whatever purpose it is. So like you'll find churches and graveyards and like huge castles and things like that.
Yeah. I agree with that. It's but also as you get deeper into the game, you're going to be able to fast travel to lamps way more conveniently.
Right. Good. Yeah, and that's huge. Yeah. Good. So you can just jump to place to place, which is nice. I also find that Bloodborne is a lot more forgiving in Dark Souls, because here's something, Zach. In Dark Souls, when you die, you turn into basically an undead, and there's an item you can use to turn back into human. Functionally, there's not really much difference between being undead and being human, with the exception that, well, the major exception, in my opinion, is as you continue to die, as you're undead, you become more and more undead, and your maximum health actually decreases.
Oh.
So imagine how you're at now, where you're at this first boss who you can't beat yet. Imagine now, like, after you've died four times, you've lost a quarter of your maximum health, and now you're trying to beat that boss. Yeah, think about that. Like, that's what Dark Souls does to you. Now, eventually, you can find an item that, like, heavily reduces that penalty, and eventually you'll have such a stockpile of the items that turn you back to human that it isn't necessarily as much of an issue, but that's incredibly punishing, yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would suck.
Yeah, it feels like they simplified a lot of the systems from previous Dark Souls games into this one. Like, previously there were these Estus flasks, which were your potions that were limited and also had a limited amount of health that they could heal. But as you explore the game, you can find more flasks, you can find more powerful flasks. And this is basically your potion count, which regenerates every single time you die. In this game, you pretty much just get the blood vial potions that you can have up to 20. You can find them pretty much constantly, or sometimes not at all, as I've noticed is sometimes the case. Like, sometimes you just have really bad luck and you don't find them, but normally you can just find them constantly. You don't really worry about leveling, at least at my point in the game so far. You just, they're potions and you can use it. In the same way that there are, I don't know if I'd say fewer systems, but definitely fewer combat systems you need to worry about. You just have to know about dodging, you have to know about killing, you have to know about parrying, and then you have to know, like, a few basic stats that the game fully explains. In Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2, I pretty much needed to use FAQs and game facts quite a bit until I actually found myself more confident several hours in.
Well. Yeah. I will say, too, though, that Dark Souls, the combat is a lot more varied. Like, Zach, you were concerned with the creature design, and I do think everything's more interesting in Bloodborne and a lot darker, like Alex said, a lot more, like, gruesome. But Dark Souls, I think, benefits from just having such varied combat, because in that, it's very much the traditional, like, you create a class and define what you want your character to be. Oh. So you can create a mage, or you can create a knight. And you can create someone who's using two weapons, or someone who uses one weapon with a huge shield that can, you know, absorb lots of damage. So there's a lot of different ways to play it. Whereas with Bloodborne, that's not the case at all. I mean, you have to be, like,
yeah, I noticed,
you know, in the enemy's face, like, just cutting away, grinding away.
I was surprised when I started up the game and it said, "What kind of weapon do you want to use? You want to use this giant axe or this bigger axe?"
Yeah, exactly.
And do you want to use this boomstick or this other boomstick?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I spent an hour on my character's face, and now her face is obscured by scarves.
Yep, you will never see her face. Yeah,
never.
So I enjoy Bloodborne, but I do wonder, like, how much that hurts the replayability for me down the road, because, like, you can play Dark Souls 2 two completely different ways.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like that's really going to be the case with Bloodborne. But, I mean, I could be wrong.
Well, Bloodborne an attempt to bring it to a wider audience?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. It's this one's made in collaboration with, what's it called? Studio Japan, is that what Sony's?
Yep. Yeah.
So they're making it in collaboration with them, which I think was also the case with Demon's Souls in Japan, despite it being published by Atlus in the West. I feel like Sony's getting behind this game and wants to take Dark Souls to the next marketable level, which, I mean, of course they want to do every single time, but it feels like they're taking it seriously now, and they're looking at a PlayStation 4's need for a good game, and also their huge-ass early audience, and I think they're trying to take advantage of it. And I haven't seen sales yet, but I would not be surprised one bit if Bloodborne cracks the NPDs next month.
Oh, what the hell else is coming out?
Right, it's gonna crack. It's gonna be high up there. I could see it finishing first, honestly. Just because, yeah, there's not much, especially in terms of like multi-platform releases that we, you know, would use sales from Xbox One and PS4 to cumulatively beat it. But yeah, I think you're right, Alex. This is totally a big push to make it the mainstream like Sony franchise. Yeah. So I'm happy to say that like it doesn't lose anything in that, in my opinion. Like, I'm still very much enjoying it despite the differences from Dark Souls 2. Like, it's still a great game. I'm surprised at really how dark it is. This is a little like side thing that you can do later on that leads to the second boss. But as you're walking through London, you can talk to people through their windows who are like, you know, holed up in their homes waiting for everything to end.
They're like, fuck you to me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because they don't want any part of it.
Right.
But you happen across a home where it's just a little kid and her dad has gone out to hunt because he's a hunter. And his or her, I can't remember if it's a little boy or a little girl. I think a little boy. But either way, and the mom has gone out to find the hunter, I think to give him something. So the little kid's at home alone, and he gives you a music box because the mom forgot it. And the music box helps the hunter kind of remember who he is, because you can kind of, just based on like how he's talking, like you can tell something's kind of wrong with the father. And later you find that boss, and the cutscene that intros the boss is him like hacking the mother apart, like with an axe. Like, he's completely lost his mind.
Wow.
And then, yeah, you're fighting him. Now, after that boss, you get the red brooch from the mother if you go find her corpse. And you have the option to either cash that in yourself and get a bunch of blood echoes, which you can use to level up and stuff. That's the currency. Or you can take it back to the kid. I chose to take it back to the kid, and you get absolutely nothing, and all you get treated to is just the kid, like, crying and asking you to stay because he doesn't want to be alone.
That's
like
nice.
that's your reward. Like, that's it. Like, great.
So does the music box help the boss fight make it easier or something?
Yes. Yeah. So you can use the music box up to 3 times to stun the enemy, basically. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. It, like, he just like stops dead in his tracks and like grabs his head and is like stunned for a good chunk of time, enough to get in there and do one of those charge attacks and get a good amount of damage on him. So yeah. So it's a good boss fight, and yeah, I mean, the game's just like that. It's just incredibly, like, dark and depressing throughout.
Yeah, nice.
So.
But also...
much more so than Dark Souls ever was, in my opinion.
But at the same time, the fact that it's so dark and... I guess it's still brutal, even if it's not quite as brutal, at least, even this far in, is that just makes it all the more rewarding when you fight one of these excellently designed bosses in this dozens-of-hour RPG... and then finally come out on the other side after attempting it 5 times in a row and failing until you figure out that one trick. Which is the entire appeal to this series, is extremely careful, deliberate combat, even though it's way faster this time around. Excellent, brutal bosses that make you feel absolutely fantastic after you beat it.
And Zach, you're going to feel amazing when you beat that cleric boss, like cleric beast. For sure.
But can I say that the minute long between death load times are a real buzzkill?
Yes, that is a problem.
Those need work. No one's really arguing with that.
Yeah, even the frame rate stutters quite frequently.
It does, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it definitely could use some ironing out there. Maybe there'll be a patch at some point that improves those things.
That'd be nice.
I could see them, like, really pushing to get those released in this window when it's not really competing against anything else.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, all right, well, I think that will do it for our first Bloodborne segment. I could easily see us coming back and doing another one, maybe once we've beaten the game or just gotten a lot further. So, yeah, if you've been playing the game, you know, email us or comment and tell us what you're thinking about the game. Maybe ask some questions or something. We'll answer it next time we do a Bloodborne segment. I'm definitely down to talk about the game some more. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm going to keep playing it. I like it.
Good. Let's talk, Zach. Let's try to coordinate meeting online, and maybe I can enter your game and help you out.
Nice.
So.
I will try to beat this first boss myself, though.
Good, go for it.
No, absolutely. If you've stuck around to the end of this segment and you still have not bought Bloodborne and you have a PlayStation 4, I think this is the first must-have PlayStation 4 exclusive. It's a fantastic, artisanally designed RPG that has all the content you could want, all the challenge you might want, And it doesn't feel like an early launch game. It feels like a game that a team worked on and tried and put their heart into. Will people be arguing that maybe this isn't as good as Dark Souls at the end of the day? Will people be arguing that it's better? Sure, on both counts. Maybe it's better, maybe it's a little worse. But this is a game that feels like a full, not launch, real-ass PlayStation 4 game. And I think that's something worth supporting.
Yep.
I was going to say, like, really? The first? And then I thought about it and I thought, what else is there, really, that's exclusive?
You were just talking about The Last of Us remastered.
Yep, that's one of them.
It's a 44 gigabyte download, and I said no.
Wow. All right, guys. Well, that will do it. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson, and today I'm with Nicholas Bray.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, and Amanda Albert.
Wow, so manly.
Shh, I think I can hear Connectivity coming in.
Well, that was not, but something.
It started strong. And, yeah, we're here to talk about some Doctor Who. It turns out, what was it, last week? Maybe 2 weeks ago now, I guess, by the time you're hearing this. It was actually the 10th anniversary of the Doctor Who reboot. The 10th anniversary of when Rose aired the first episode with the 9th Doctor. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about that episode and then even just kind of revisit how we all got into Doctor Who. Because I know, at least for most of us, Nicholas, he's the wild card here. I have no idea when he got into Doctor Who, but I know for Amanda and I, it's closely linked to the reboot.
The year was 1963, Scott.
I was waiting. It's like, this is where we find out! Alien autopsy!
I'm actually, like, 60-something.
He incepted you!
I mean, I just assumed that, like, just, like, looking at Hugh Jackman, they're, like, all Australians, just have incredible genes and always look young. So I'd believe it, Nick, if you told me that you were, like, 60 years old. I would buy it.
Racist!
But it's, like, good racism, right? That's not so bad. So, yeah. Let's talk about Rose.
Off to a great start, as usual.
Yeah, this is classic Doctor Who connectivity segment right here.
No, because we have not mentioned...
The Master?
That, yeah.
So...
I feel like it only took us 80 million times and we got it. We figured it out.
I mean, eventually, right? Like, you have to get it right at some point.
Yeah.
So, Rose, let's talk a little bit about this episode and when we all started watching the show. A little confession for myself. I had heard a lot of people talking about Doctor Who. This was probably the summer of 2011, maybe? Maybe 10. I'm getting my... It might have been 10, but either way, you know, like everyone had been talking about Doctor Who at some point, and I knew it was a thing and very popular and supposed to be very good.
It was in the air.
Yeah, it was in the summertime air. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to give this show a shot. I'm going to jump in here. And it was one night, it was just me. I think my wife was already in bed or something. So I crept downstairs to, you know, watch some scandalous Doctor Who. And, I started the first episode, and I feel like this isn't really so much an issue now, but Netflix used to have a lot of issues where just, like, things wouldn't play and wouldn't work. So I actually got to watch, like, the first 5 minutes of the first episode, and then it had an error and, like, wouldn't keep going. So I had to skip to episode 2. So it actually wasn't until much later that I went back and watched that first episode. And And I'm not a big fan of it. I'm not a big fan of the first episode, if I can be honest with you guys. I think the second episode is much, much better when, like, what is it, the end of Earth? Isn't that the second episode? I think that's a very interesting episode. I find the plastic dummies to not be a very exciting villain for the first episode. I know they've appeared before in the classic series, but that's just my little bit of story before we really jump into the episode. But what about you guys? Like, how did, what'd you guys think about it at the time when you first watched it?
I recorded it on VHS and, like, we watched it a lot. Like, cause I, when it aired in, the UK, I think there was like a 3 or 4 month, gap between then and when it aired here in Australia. So, you know, I tried downloading it. My connection was really, really slow, so I never got to download the first episode. Cause I was waiting for it for ages, like leading up to it. So I was like reading forums and sort of getting excited about it. Cause the,
Wait. What kind of forums?
The original Outpost Gallifrey, which is now known as Gallifrey Base under like new management. It's like one of the largest Doctor Who forums out there.
This is some inside baseball shit.
But, I was like reading that and cause like the ABC here in Australia, started airing the series from the start. I think it probably was around 2003 for the 40th anniversary. So like when that all sort of happened, they like just started playing it from the very first episode all the way through. So that the original series was like wrapping up around the time Rose was about to air. I think there was a little bit of overlap, but I stopped watching it during the Colin Baker stuff and the Sylvester McCoy stuff. So yeah, watching Rose, it was, I liked most of it, but with this and even like later on what the Slitheen and stuff, the two-parter there, like there's some good moments in both episodes, but I don't know. It just felt like, especially with the Slitheen, they were, if I was running the show, I wouldn't have tempted fate in putting this sort of wacky stuff in. Cause like it could have easily gone the other way and people hated it and they got it shut down within one series. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like they wanted to, if they didn't latch onto that like inherent, like camp element from the classic, like it wouldn't jive well, but I think they, you know, they underestimate how much smarter audiences actually are now. Like they don't need that slapstick kind of, you know what I mean? Guy in a rubber suit, hijinks, Scooby-Doo bullshit.
Farting monsters, yeah.
Yeah.
See, like, that came down to a bit of the direction, apparently, as well. Like, I think I read somewhere that the original script, it was all meant to be a lot more sort of not as wacky, if you can believe that. But I don't know how you could do it without being, like, wacky, but still, the word that was used was more sinister.
I will say, though, and this is, like, persistent throughout Doctor Who, but especially this first season, it's the frequent moments of sort of, like, silliness and lightheartedness that makes the moments where it gets darker and more serious that much more, like, pronounced and impactful to me. Like, I mean, coming from, like, the farting monsters and then going to the World War II episodes, or arc, I guess you could say, was really good, I thought. And like the kid is creepy, the Are You My Mommy with the, you know, the gas mask like burned into his face, and then up until the end with, you know, Captain Jack like pretty much ready to like commit suicide to save everybody, and then, you know, the doctor saves him. Like that made that whole arc that much more exciting because it was unexpected to me at the time, because I really, like, I was enjoying it, but I kind of thought, yeah, you know, this is kind of silly. I don't really necessarily see the appeal. I don't know how long I will continue to watch it, but then those two episodes.
Forever.
Yeah, exactly. But then those two episodes were like, oh wow, no.
Even when you don't want to anymore.
Yeah. Like this is something special. Like this is something that's worth
special
watching.
Special is a word.
It is.
series one, I find really pretty good overall because it introduces like pretty much everything you need to know about Doctor Who over the course of that one series.
That's hard to do. Yeah.
Yeah. There was so much ground to be covered that I forget that sometimes there was a lot of fucking shit that they were going to have to cover and like not make it look totally fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I would I couldn't have done that better.
And for some reason, still, like, because I rewatched Rose the other day, and I've watched like other episodes of series one relatively recently, and Eccleston comes across, there's something about him that makes it feel more real, even more real than any of the new Doctors. Because when David Tennant took over, I liked him, but it lost something. It lost some of that sort of...
He's a very natural actor.
Yeah. Like that, there's a scene in the Slovene two-parter at the very start where Rose and him have come back and they're sitting on the rooftop and stuff talking about whatever. And I always like that scene, those sort of
Me
scenes.
Me too. I think of that one a lot. It's very... It just feels like a conversation that you would have.
Mm.
Like, I watched it about 15 minutes... I just finished about 15 minutes ago before I walked in here. And I remember... I just recently watched one of the Capaldi ones not long ago. And I said to Mike, I was like, isn't it interesting how here they're all acting like normal human beings? Like... Everything that they're doing makes sense. You're not like, that's a weird motivation. Why would he say it that way? Like, that's not how anyone would behave. Like,
no, you're right. Like, the Ninth Doctor is so much more grounded.
And so
and
is everybody else around
him,
too.
Yeah.
It's very clear what everybody wants, and you understand why, even if you don't agree. Ugh.
Yeah, and I feel like I do agree that that has been lost. I feel like gradually as it's gone on, and now that I feel like that's especially pronounced now with with Capaldi's Doctor. Unfortunately, because I enjoy Capaldi's Doctor, but there's definitely
a great actor, and he does that. He does it really well.
Right, but the story around it sometimes is lacking.
Yeah, it's not. He's doing the best he can with the material he's given. It's not for anything on his part. It's just. I don't know, the writing is not bad, but it's very inconsistent.
Yeah. So, Amanda, what about you, though? You haven't really said, like, what drew you into the show. So how did you get
hooked? I managed to fucking put my 2 cents in every step of the way, though. no, I started watching it, I think at about... I must have started watching it late 2010, early 2011.
Okay, so around the same time as me, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I kept hearing about it from different people that I shared a lot of similar interests with. And then I was also listening to the Nerdist podcast, and that is a constant reference point. And I was like, well, I feel like I have to listen to it just so I can understand why they're laughing now. And so that quickly just, you know... I have ADD, so...
Turn into an addiction quite quickly.
Yeah. I must know. It makes me feel like when I was a kid and I was obsessed with Sailor Moon and I had to get every fucking trading card of Sailor Moon.
And it kind of has that feel because it is... like it
or
does
like
feel,
Pokemon.
Yeah, because it does feel like foreign and unknown at the same time because you're not really getting in on the ground floor. I mean, especially jumping in when you and I did. So it's like there's already... seasons beyond what you're starting with, and then there's so much to explore.
And there's
like
a ton
before.
Of history.
Exactly. So,
and just aside from like that show and the characters and the story, it's also very easy to get obsessed with like who wrote that one, mm-hmm. what was the, you know, story with the production at the time, like all that crap can be interesting too.
Yeah, I agree.
Like the there's bubble wrap in this fucking episode because bubble wrap was brand new in 1974. So fucking dumb.
Yeah, it's funny to think that back when that aired, like the Ark in Space aired with the bubble wrap, people would have gone...
You know what episode?
Of course I do. It was season 12.
You know what's... At first I was like, yeah, like it felt perfectly normal. I didn't think for a minute, no, that's weird that he... Most people would think that's weird. It's great.
But yeah, the bubble wrap in that was like, oh yeah. Everyone would have like not known really know what that was. And like, it was like, oh, that's an alien skin. Now we just laugh at it.
I love it so much. It's so funny every time.
It's a good story though, that one.
Yeah, but I love that kind of stuff about the show too, where you wonder why they did this weird thing and maybe it's some weird little tale about what happened with production and this thing broke. So that's why they did it that way. It's like, mm-hmm.
Now, starting with Rose and moving on, Amanda, were you instantly hooked? Did it take some time before it really got like its hooks in you? How did it go?
Well, I watched, I knew that there, what really piqued my interest was, I'm obsessed with Vincent Van Gogh, and I knew that there was going to be a Vincent Van Gogh episode at some point. And I was like, well, which doctor do I start? Well, I'll just do that. I'll skip ahead. And so then when I caught up with all the Matt Smith stuff, I went back and started at Eccleston. And then I burned through that. And then who's this curly-haired, weird, big teeth freak? So good.
It's pretty, like, yeah, I watched that. I watched that one, like, not that long ago, and it's a pretty good episode. And, it's really the end, it's really the end, though, that hits you, like, that ending is so good.
Right, when they still couldn't stop him from killing himself.
And, no, yeah. They bring him forward to the future, and, Bill Nye, gives him that speech about how good he is and stuff.
Right, right.
And the music, and, like, it's so good, that scene.
And you guys don't understand, if Bill Nye is in it, I have seen it. So on top of that, he's in it.
Yeah, that's an incredible episode. It's such a good standalone episode. Like, I feel like even like an art fan could watch that without really understanding Doctor Who, and still I think get a lot.
That's
out of it.
Why I was like, I gotta stick this shit
there
out.
There are episodes like that during Doctor Who where you could just it sort of rises above being like in continuity Doctor Who, and anyone could like just jump in and watch it.
That's the episode. If I ever want to hook anybody, that's where I'm like, watch this, because everybody knows Van Gogh. It does not matter. It's so, and what everybody is doing, again, it's like Rose, the way Amy's behaving makes sense. The way the doctor, it all there's no like dumb fucking, there's still surprises, but you don't sit there confused the whole fucking time.
Right. I agree. Yeah. To me, it's like that episode and Blink are the two that, like, if you want to get some of the Doctor Who, like, show them those two episodes, and I feel like you've
Blink
got
Blink is a good one, too.
Yeah. Like, for completely different reasons to me. Like you said, like, Van Gogh is more about, like, exploring the story of the characters, and then Blink is so much more about, like,
You're able to see the emotional depth that's potentially there.
Right.
It's not just sci-fi.
Blink is, like, just a great example of the storytelling and the mystery of it, and how that can all come together, like, so great.
It's so clever.
Sometimes. Yeah. So... but yeah, so, I mean, that's...
But I will say, Eccleston is great. He's underrated.
He is. He's one of my favorite new doctors. Like, like I said, it's hard to put a finger on why, but there's something about that season and, the way he interacts with people and stuff that feels more real, even when, like, the stuff happening could be ridiculous.
Like, yeah. It doesn't feel like he's acting. It feels like he's just happening to have a conversation. These are his lines, but I mean, it's very much just how he would be naturally anyways.
And he's not a superhero. You know, I feel like steadily the other, up to Capaldi, because I feel like they worked really hard to give Capaldi fault and make him less like just 100% likable, which I think is good. But to me, the Ninth Doctor is much less of a superhero and sort of on equal footing with the rest of the characters, I feel like.
That's actually something that was at the time, I like vaguely remember people sort of not complaining about, but sort of talking about that season one and that all of the new series, really, the Doctor becomes, he doesn't really resolve as much of the story. Like, he sort of, like, that could fall to, like, Rose or the companion, like, some whatever, like, he's not like the one that usually resolves the issues a lot of the time. It sort of just happens. Or, you know, even in the first episode, like Rose, like she saves him and everything.
I do feel like that's more realistic though.
Of course. Yeah, of course. But, I'm just bringing it up as a point of interest.
Otherwise, that batting average. Just.
So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I just kind of wanted to use this opportunity of the 10th anniversary to talk a little bit about how we got into it and our initial thoughts of the series, because I think everyone by now knows that we love the series for better or worse. So I think it's interesting that apart from Nick, I mean, you know, Amanda and I didn't really have much experience with it and then got completely addicted to it.
Nick is like OG.
Yeah, Nick's legit.
It was 10 years ago. And I was still recording things on VHS.
Yeah, that's the best part of the story.
That's the only way I could keep season one.
You're going to have like a big Doctor Who VHS around your neck.
Still got like 6 VHS tapes with like old episodes on them.
Nice. Hey, I still got Gargoyles on VHS, so
don't let that go. That's not on DVD, right?
It is.
It is.
Yeah, it's great.
So, all right. Well, yeah.
Mike hates me.
So that'll do it. Amanda, Nick, thank you for being here. I'm sure we'll talk some Doctor
Good
Who again.
Good meeting.
Yeah, we'll talk some Doctor Who again in the future when there's some new episodes to discuss.
Gotta get that fix.
That's right. We will talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Bye.
And welcome to this segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson, and it's time for some Jeopardy. My co-host today is Zach Miller.
Hater's gonna hate.
You are on a roll this episode. That is two segments now where you're coming in with a musical interlude. I like it. And then our contestants today, I think the last time we did this on the show, we might have done listeners, but fuck the listeners. It's back to staff.
Oh, wow.
Our first contestant, all right, Neil Ronahan.
Way to burn bridges, dick.
Hey, I'm out, so I can burn all the bridges I want.
Have you like made it a formal thing on this episode, or are people going to be like, why did Scott leave?
No, this is the first time where it's being mentioned, which is probably the worst segment for it to be mentioned in. But there you go. There you are. Andy Gergen is our next contestant.
Hey, Zach.
Hi.
I'll write your name.
Zach,
I don't know what that means. I just don't know what that means in that stupid song. God.
Yeah, I know, but it's
a sweet sound effect of a pen clicking.
I thought it was a gun cocking. And then our third contestant, Nathan Mustafa.
Hey, I'm looking forward to something a little different than the Smash Brothers tournament, because I will only be letting down myself today.
No, we're putting you against JP in the next game. It's good.
What if they self-destructed at the same time on their last sock?
That would be incredible.
We're going to take a flying leap at each other and down B while we're over nothing.
The funny thing is that, Nathan, despite you not winning a game, your team could still win the whole fucking thing. Like, you've got a reasonable chance.
It's great.
Yeah.
Nathan only has to play once during each of the playoff matches out of 5 rounds. So.
Yeah. It was so fantastic on round 4 when... You guys are like, hey, Nathan can pull it off this week. Oh, no, he died.
I know, we were like in mid-compliment to him. We were like, yeah. Nathan's lost every match. But
yeah, and I was over my stats being like, well, yeah, everyone he's lost, he's it's been down to his last life. It's been close. And then he fucking loses with 2 stock to the other guy.
And like self-destructed a couple times too.
That was the laggiest match I've ever played, by the way. I'm not going to just blame the lag, but I'm going to just blame the lag.
It contributed. If it weren't for the lag, equipment. It would have been a close loss as opposed to a poor loss.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
So, this is Jeopardy, believe it or not. And Zach wrote the questions. Zach and I are going to host. We're going to see who's the champion here between these newscast OGs. And, it should be fun. Zach, do you want to introduce the categories for the first round?
Sure. The first round categories are Because I'm Happy, In Memoriam, Remakes, Make Mine Mega, Club Nintendo, and In Indies.
Okay, is In Memoriam, is that like a play on words, or is it supposed to be In Memoriam?
That one, I guess.
Okay. I was just
you
like,
had me convinced
that?
For a minute that I have been getting it wrong all my life.
Neil, this is it's a podcast.
We apparently, I've been getting it wrong my whole life, Andy.
So just for the fun of it, since we were just making fun of him, Nathan, why don't you get pick at the board?
I'll take In Memoriam.
All right, for how much?
Wait. But before we do, is there any, like, do we have to let him finish the question or answer before?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we have to read the whole question.
I will take the lowest denominator available.
$100. Great.
Denomination.
So here you go. So for $100, This crimson-clad and goggle-based console was on the market for less than a year between 1995 and 1996. It is considered a collectible today. looks like Andy.
What is the Virtual Boy?
That is correct. the board is yours, Andy.
Let's just keep going.
Cool. So for 200, despite getting plenty of screen time in The Wizard, this NES accessory sold poorly and performed even worse. Looks like Andy again.
What is the Power Glove?
That is correct.
Mm.
All right.
Old shit. This is my.
No, you're just getting in faster. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
That sweet Nebraska high speed internet.
Nathan, is there more lag you'd like to blame right now?
No, that's what I'm going to blame here.
I don't think I would have come in on time, but maybe second.
There you go.
All right, for 400, the Ocarina of Time Master Quest was originally supposed to be released on this Japan-only hardware expansion for the N64.
Woohoo!
That looks like Neil.
Yeah, what is the Nintendo 64 DD, or the 64
that
DD?
That is correct. I love, by the way, that they nearly released hardware in America that would have been called the Double D.
Almost as bad as Wii.
Yeah, exactly. Neil, where would you like to go now?
Let's go. I want to know. I'm curious about this one because I'm happy for the lowest denominator.
For 100, okay. Once its friendship or happiness stat is high enough, this Pokemon evolves into Blissey.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Chansey?
Yes!
If you didn't say Blissey at the end, I had no freaking idea.
I thought this was going to be a Mortal Kombat question for the first half of it.
The fatality happens then. Let's because I'm happy for 200.
All right. This Way Forward Wii game is still the only one that features a hug button.
Nathan.
Yeah.
What is Buenos Blob?
Yes.
I realized if I send probably a shorter message in the chat, I'll probably get through a little sooner.
That's great.
Are we allowed to have our message typed out and then just hit enter?
That'd be kind of a dick move, but maybe.
Go ahead. You guys can have, yeah, all you have to do is press enter. That's fine.
Okay.
I did. Well,
okay. Oh, that's a good point because they only use this. Yeah, they use it. Whatever. Okay. Nathan, what's next?
Let's go one up.
One. Oh, in the same category?
Yeah.
Okay. In this cartoony Super Nintendo platformer, you would not want to make Peter Puppy unhappy.
Oh, shit.
All right. Boop, boop, boop.
The answer is, what is Earthworm Jim?
Shit.
Huh.
I was like, it's something like Earthworm Jim, but I don't think it's Earthworm Jim.
Nathan, the board remains yours.
We'll keep going.
Okay, 800. If your Bliss score is high enough in this 3DS game, you can learn to ride a tortoise.
Woohoo!
Yeah, Neil, I knew Neil would get that.
What is Fantasy Life?
Yes, sir.
Oh, damn it.
Riding a tortoise in that game is really fun.
It is, actually. Better than a horse, because horses are stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I named my horse after my grandpa who died around when that game came out, so...
Way to be a dick, Zach.
Now we can't make fun of it, Neil.
When I was a little girl in Poland, everybody had a pony.
All right, so do we have one more because I'm happy?
We have 1,000 points in the happy.
Let's do that. Let's do that.
Okay. In Minish Cap, friendship is signified by exchanging these matching rocks.
And, what are kinstones?
Yeah. Andy's on the board.
Let me do a quick score recap for you guys. Neil, 1,300 points. Andy, 1,300 points. Nathan Mustafa, 200 points. But no one's missed the question, so.
I'm just happy I'm not negative.
I'm just happy I'm on TV.
Hi, Mom.
All right, so Andy, the board is yours, and that category is now empty.
I need to scroll up and look at the topics again. Okay, let's go with remakes for 100.
That's me, isn't it? Okay.
Yep.
This high-profile remake developed by Way Forward features voice actors from the original Disney cartoon.
Woohoo!
Neil.
Oh, okay. What is DuckTales Remastered?
Are you Googling it first?
No. I thought it was because of what I typed in. I didn't, because on my screen it actually displayed it as Nathan getting it first, so it didn't even register for me.
Same on my screen.
But, oh wait, no. You're right. That was Nathan.
Okay.
Ooh.
It was Nathan.
So Nathan.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. What is DuckTales Remastered?
Yes, sir.
Correct. Some bullshit.
All right.
Nathan.
Nathan.
Let's keep going.
Okay, 200 points. According to director Masahiro Ueno, I hope I got that right, this Super Nintendo game, the fourth entry in its franchise, is actually a remake of the NES original.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Super Castlevania 4?
Yeah.
I was thinking of four games on Super Nintendo as opposed to the fourth game. I was just like, what the hell had four games on Super Nintendo?
Yeah, good right. question.
What, remakes for 300?
400?
Or 400. Yeah, let's do that.
All right. This series reboot introduced the Zero Suit.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Metroid Zero Mission?
Yes, sir.
Which, damn it, I want that to come out on Wii U Virtual Console.
Yeah, how is that going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen if it hasn't yet. I think they're being
it's
dicks.
Out in everywhere else.
Yeah, it is.
It'll happen. It'll definitely happen.
Let's go... As far as, so we can complain more about things not coming out, make mine Mega for 100.
All right, for 100. In this latest and seemingly last entry in the original Mega Man series, the world's robots come down with Robenza virus. Andy.
Oh, shit.
Oh, Mega Man 10? What is Mega Man 10?
Correct.
Yep.
Do we clear out remakes?
Nope. No.
Let's go back to that.
For 800.
800, yeah, sounds good.
You'll like this question, Andy. An HD remake of this famous GameCube remake just hit PlayStation consoles. Yeah, there, good. Andy.
What is Resident Evil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also would have accepted remake.
Oh. let's close it out.
1000, originally released on the PS2 in 2002... This Disc Armor-based action game was ported to Wii in 2008 under a different subtitle.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Rygar?
Give me more.
I don't remember what the original one's called.
You lose. Andy.
Fuck.
Do I have to have an answer?
Well, see, there are a lot of games called Rygar, so yeah, you do.
The Rygar that came out on PlayStation 2, assholes. Come on.
But I didn't get the buzzer. Neil did it. Don't I have to buzz in again?
Well, yeah. Right. I think Andy's safe.
Because okay. I'm going to give the same answer that Neil gave.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, if Andy didn't want to, like, buzz in again.
I know that the Wii one is Battle for Argus, I think.
Right.
But I don't know what the PS2 one is.
Okay. Nathan, anything?
Oh,
I could have sworn it was called Rygar.
All right, it's Rygar the Legendary Adventure.
Oh, come on.
That. I kind of figured that would be generic enough that everyone would know it.
Yeah, but I didn't know that game existed until it was remade on Wii.
Really?
I actually played it on PS2. It's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
All right, so what is it, Andy's board? Or?
Yeah, I think
it is. He got the Resident Evil question.
Okay.
So we still have two in memoriam.
Let's go back.
We can keep going in other ones as well.
Let's go back and clear out in memoriam.
Okay. So for 800 points, let me clear out the chat here. Okay. This final failed entry in this long-lived handheld line was released as a backup in case Nintendo's ambitious Nintendo DS died on the vine. Woohoo! Neil.
What is the Game Boy Micro?
Correct.
I've got two of them, baby.
All right. What do we got? One more in there from a thousand? Yeah. Let's do it.
This portable system took third place in the early 90s handheld wars and was uniquely designed for both left and right-handed gamers. Andy.
What is the Atari Lynx?
Good, right?
Nice.
I read my share of EGM during that particular era. All right. Let's pop over to Club Nintendo for 100.
Okay, that's Scott.
No, that's you.
Shit, all right. It was the first game you could get digitally on the Club Nintendo service, and if you act quickly, you still can.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Grill Ultra Hand?
I don't know if I can accept that.
Andy buzzed in afterwards, so yeah. Let's not accept it.
Andy.
What is Grill Off with Ultra Hand?
Yeah.
There it is. Oh. Nathan, how you doing?
You know, I'm hanging on.
Do we want a score update real quick before Andy continues?
Yeah, because Andy's making the
I think I'm at like 300.
Nathan, good job.
Thank you. Good
Neil is at 1,600. Andy is at 3,300. And Nathan is at 300.
I have the least to lose.
So go ahead, Andy.
Let's just keep going.
Okay. It was the first platinum reward for North American Club Nintendo members.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is the Mario hat and
yes.
or the Punch-Out game? Doc Lewis's Punch-Out. Because there were two.
Oh, did you have the option back then?
Yeah.
I thought Doc Lewis was next year. Well,
no,
whatever.
No, it was
right.
Doc Lewis or the Mario hat, because I distinctly remember picking Doc Lewis because I was okay. Like, I don't need a Mario hat. I just want to play more Punch-Out.
Well, you're right either way. Isn't it just like a demo for Punch-Out?
Well, yeah, you could just fight Doc Lewis. Like, it was pretty dumb. I regret nothing, though. And I think now
did
you can...
Did you
can...
fight Doc Lewis, or did you fight as Doc Lewis?
You fought Doc Lewis.
Okay.
Huh.
It was kind of... I mean, it's neat as, like, kind of a curio. And I think you can get it on Club Nintendo before it's
you
all
can,
gone.
For $250.
Which is a little pricey.
It I is. Think.
Okay, so whatever's next in that category we were doing.
All right, 400. This quickly sold out reward would have gone great with your Skyward Sword Special Edition.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is the gold Wii Nunchuck?
Yes, sir.
Correct.
I got one, and I don't have the special edition.
I haven't, and I have the special edition. I get that's if I play a Wii Remote game, that or Wii Remote Nunchuck game, I use my gold shit.
I would if I had it.
Let's do the next thing in Club Nintendo.
This is just kind of a poorly written question, I'm realizing now. This short-lived reward celebrated Luigi's Mansion 2... and fetches upward of $150 on eBay.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is the Luigi's Mansion statue?
Yeah.
You can tell who's a big fan of Club Nintendo.
I was worried that it was going to be like, what is the Luigi's Mansion statue Legendary Adventures? Or something like that. So that's why I almost didn't buzz in, because I was like, eh. Let's do the next in that category.
1,000. Limited to 1,000 units. A small coin featuring this character was released to celebrate the franchise's 20th anniversary.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Luigi?
No.
Incorrect.
Oh, shit.
Let's reread the question.
Limited to 1,000 units, a small coin featuring this character was released to celebrate the franchise's 20th anniversary. Doot, doot, doot. What is it, Neil? Yep.
There was a Luigi coin, though, but it wasn't...
Yeah.
It wasn't to celebrate 20. It was to celebrate the year of Luigi.
Yeah.
That's my stupid thing for hearing, like, oh, the coin. There was the Luigi coins that everyone lost their shit about.
All right, Neil, board's still yours.
Yeah, you're still...
What do we got left?
Make mine Mega and Indies.
Let's do Indies for 1,000.
Whoa. Big baller. This indie game, Tom Happ's Love Letter to Metroid, should be on Wii U, but Monogame is not currently supported on Nintendo systems.
Oh.
What is Axiom Verge?
Correct.
Nice.
It's bullshit.
Let's hop to 100 and work our way back down.
The most recent release from this indie darling was Zeo Drifter, a bite-sized Metroid game. Woohoo! Neil.
What is Renegade Kid?
Correct.
Alright, I'll do 200 in that category.
Featuring the vocal talents of Charles Martinet, this charming platformer zoomed onto the Wii U eShop in February of 2013. Woohoo!
Neil. What is Runner 2, Future Legend of Rhythm Alien?
Correct.
Or, no, Bit Trip Presents Runner 2,
okay,
Future Legend of Rhythm Alien.
Smart guy.
Whatever's next in that category.
All right, so for 400, this WayForward eShop threequel was delayed several times, but eventually proved to be one of the best games on 3DS. Woohoo! Neil.
What is Shantae and the Pirate's Curse?
Correct.
Let's
I feel like
close,
Neil's
think...
cleaning up now.
Mm-hmm. Close it out. Right?
No, we got
There's
two
more.
More. Oh, you're right. Only
no,
one more.
No, yep, one more. All right. Though Ingenuity and through Ingenuity and Multicolored Magic, this upcoming Wii U party game can have up to 9 players.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Runbo?
Correct. Getting a clear idea that, like, Neil's good at, like, new stuff, and Andy's good at old stuff.
Nathan's chilling.
Nathan's having a good time. He's soaking in the knowledge. So what, Make Mine Mega is all we have left?
Yeah, 2 to 1,000.
I love Nintendo, but I'm really bad at it.
let's go 200 with Make Mine Mega.
Nathan, right, you're going to be laughing all the way to the bank when these guys lose all their money in Final Jeopardy.
Yes, I'm positive that's going to happen.
It's like, what is Nathan Mustafa's middle name? Like,
What Got WiiWare it. Game took place in a deer basement?
I think that was DSiWare, right?
No, it was WiiWare. I reviewed it.
All right, for 200, Mega Man X and Zero get pulled into a dimensional rift that also traps characters from other Capcom, Sega, and Namco games in this 3DS RPG. Neil.
What is Project Crosszone?
Correct.
Let's do the next in that category.
Instead of classic Mega Man or Mega Man X, players got to choose this iteration in Tatsunoko vs. Capcom.
Woohoo!
Neo.
What is Volnut?
Yeah, I'll take it. Mega Man Volnut. It. Correct.
I think that's what his name is. Like,
it
when
is.
You play
it
as
is.
Him, I think it's just Volnut. I don't even think it's Mega Man Volnut. Because it's, like, weird, because Mega Man's his first name. That universe is stupid.
It is.
The games
it's
are fun.
Retarded.
But that universe is dumb.
Yeah. All right, so for 800 points, despite being named individually after planets, the antagonists in Mega Man 5 for Game Boy are known collectively as these.
Oh, shit.
No.
Boop, boop, boop. What are star droids?
Okay, I did know okay. it, but I didn't want to gamble.
My answer of robots would not have gotten me very far.
Robots.
I've already, like, haven't I gotten the wrong answer on two 1,000 points? 1,000 pointers.
Definitely one. Yeah, two. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
This is some poor shit. All right, let's go.
All right, well, here's
I got another 1,000 pointer to lose it.
Here's your chance to make it three. The third game in this GBA spinoff series explains why the protagonist doesn't look exactly like he did in the previous series.
Oh.
Nathan.
Oh, I'm going to go negative. Mega Man, what is Mega Man Battle Network 3?
Oh, that
incorrect.
Hurts. Like where your head's at, though.
Okay. Can I ask for a score update as to whether or not I try to answer this one?
No, you asshole. Answer the question.
No, because he'd know his score. You're behind Andy by 200 points.
Hmm.
I'm calling it, yeah. It is, what is Mega Man Zero?
Okay. So with the third entry in a series,
yep.
I'm not familiar with my Mega Man GBA games.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's four
so
games.
So how is that? Okay. So what's the lineage of those that spin-off series?
Mega Man Zero takes place a few hundred years after the X games. Everybody's dead.
Oh, you weren't looking for the specific name of
no.
the game. Oh, no. Damn it. Because that's what I was like, right. What's Mega Man Zero 3? I don't think that's the name of it. I feel like it's got a dumb subtitle.
See, I still managed to screw it up.
So that brings us to the end of the first round here. Quick scoring update. Neil is at 4,100 points. Andy is at 4,300 points. And Nathan is at negative 700 points.
It's all about perspective.
Let me copy the next round of categories for you.
Oh, I can do that if you want.
Oh, there's more.
That's only round one, buddy. All right, here you go.
The categories this round are Smash Trophies, Nintendo, Birds of a Feather, Social Studies, Pointing and Waggling, and Mario Kart.
And I'll remind everyone at home that the points are now worth double in this round, so a chance to catch up or a chance to fall even more behind. Not saying names.
Looking at you, Neil. There's no choice. I'll take pointing and waggling for 200.
That is you, Scott. No, it's
nope,
me.
That
Shit.
Is you.
God damn it. Can't count. 200 points. Use of the Wii Remote. Or use. I can't read. What's wrong with it? Use the Wii Remote to set broken bones, stitch lacerations, and remove tumors in this Atlas game.
Woohoo!
Dildo. Neil.
What is Trauma Center Second Opinion? Or New Blood or Trauma Team? Because there's three Wii games that you would all do that in.
Really?
There were three entries in the Trauma series. Yeah.
I know, but I didn't think
But there's only one in which you can do all of the actions that Zach listed.
Well, then what is Trauma Center's Second Opinion?
No.
Andy. What is Trauma Team?
Yeah.
Why did I not answer?
I don't think there's any setting of bones in the old ones.
No, there's not. There? Orthopedics is new in Trauma Team.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Damn, Neil, damn. Andy, the board is yours.
Let's go with, I don't like any of these. Birds of a Feather for 100, 200.
Okay. Damn it, that's me too. All right. This bird tries and eventually succeeds in delivering Baby Mario and Baby Luigi to their parents.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is the stork?
Stork! Yep.
Oh, what?
Yes.
Let's do pointing and waggling for 400, or whatever it is, the second one.
Quit making me read. Okay, need to reload in House of the Dead 2 and 3 Return? Do this!
Woohoo!
No, Neil.
What is Shake the Remote?
Yes.
Oh.
Let's do pointing and waggling for whatever's next.
800. Playing Wii Sports Resort is a good way to practice bomb throwing in this late era Wii game. Oh, damn, Andy.
What is The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword?
Yeah. I thought you might get that.
Let's continue.
1600. Games in this sports series benefited greatly from the advent of the Wii Motion Plus. Prior to its release, it was easy to end up in the sand.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Tiger Woods PGA Tour?
Yeah.
Let's do whatever is next. What is that? The final one in pointing
the 2000, final one.
Yep.
In this spooky Wii game, players use the Wii remote as a flashlight and a cell phone. Andy.
What is Silent Hill Shattered Memories?
Yeah, baby.
That's my kind of question.
I need to get
right
back
there.
To that game.
All right. Let's move to Smash Trophies for 200.
So the way this works is I read you a section of a trophy description. Ooh. And you tell me what the trophy is.
That's clever.
These are super easy, though. So 200, he's a big croc with a big attitude and a tiny crown.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is King K. Rool?
Yeah, I also would have accepted who is King K. Rool.
whatever's next. In that category.
400. If you manage to launch him or knock him over, he'll become an ally to whoever dealt the last blow. Doot-doot-doot. Who is Ridley?
I was going to say there's multiple things that could apply to. I think.
Yeah, but
right?
This is text from his trophy.
Okay.
I don't know. None of the others team
yeah,
up.
Yeah, none of the
right?
other,
like,
no.
Yeah,
Yellow
like
Devil just dies.
The Xenoblade level, yeah, and the Xenoblade.
I was thinking of the
dies.
Dumb thing on the 3DS one from Earthbound.
Yeah, but
that I think you just touch it.
You're talking about that could apply to any character in any video game made by Nintendo, or that could have ever appeared on a platform made by Nintendo.
Yeah,
like,
I'm not going to argue it. They're right. They got us. We should have known.
I'm just saying. Like, I get why you didn't ring in, because that could have been a Kid Icarus Game Boy question for all we knew.
But it's Smash Trophies.
Well, right.
For Smash
You
Brothers.
Just had one for King K. Rool.
Yeah, but he's in...
He was still in Smash it. Brothers, but
do you wanna,
like...
Do you want to do the 800 or move on?
Yeah, let's do your Smash Trophies category.
Jesus. For 800, is that a three-headed monster? No, wait. The left and right heads are actually claws. Creepy.
Shit.
Doot-doot-doot. What is Scizor?
Okay. Let's do the
is that
next
one of them
thing,
damn Pokemon?
Yeah.
Yep. One of those Pokemans.
Yeah. See, I don't feel bad about that because I would have never gotten that. So let's move on. Another Smash Trophy.
This for 1600. This massive baddie splits itself into small pieces and flies across the battlefield, striking anyone in the way.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is the Yellow Devil?
Yes.
Oh, God. Of course.
Let's close that out.
2000. This is my favorite one to write. It leafs you without mushroom to maneuver and makes you the laughing stock of your friends. Oh, somebody's got to get this. Come on.
So punny. It hurts.
Yeah, it is. Doot, doot, doot. What is eggplant pit?
Ah.
That's wonderful.
Let's do a quick scoring update. Yeah. Now that we've figured one out. Neil has rocketed ahead to 7,900 points.
Holy crap.
Andy just close behind with 7,300 points. And Nathan. Neil, the board is yours. Nathan, right. you're at negative 7.
Okay, so pointing and waggling and smash trophies are both done, and we've done... What else have we done?
We started one, didn't we?
Started Birds of a Feather.
Let's do Nintendo for whatever's first.
200. All right. Like the PSP before it, this handheld system has been all but abandoned by its platform holder and has become a haven for weird Japanese games. Andy.
The PlayStation Vita.
Correct.
Let's keep going.
This expansive headline release on the Xbox One has faced constant issues since launch, especially in regards to online multiplayer.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Halo the Master Chief Collection?
Correct.
Let's go next in Nintendo.
Alright, keyboard controllers were never utilized more than for this Dreamcast game from Sega.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Phantasy Star Online?
Incorrect.
Oh, shit.
Anyone else like to buzz in? Alright, doot. What is Typing of the Dead?
No. Oh, God.
It is literally
I forgot that came out on Dreamcast.
Hell yeah.
Alright.
Another Nintendo, please.
Okay. Want to look cool playing first-person shooters on your PS3? Try this Super Scope-like device, which turns your Move controller into a ridiculous gun.
I forget the name of it.
Boop, boop, boop. What is the sharpshooter?
Okay.
Naturally.
Better than Menacer.
Yeah.
Dude, I had a Menacer when I was a kid. It broke, though. But, like, Ready Aim Tomatoes, man, that was the shit. Moving on.
Okay, last one in this category. For 2000, originally released on the PS1, this port was a launch title for the ill-fated Nokia N-Gage, where players had to deal with a vertically oriented screen that cut off most of their view.
Okay,
what is Tomb Raider?
Correct.
Oh my yes! God.
Because that's what I was like, I mean, I've never fucking played an N-Gage, but I was like, I think Tomb Raider was ported to it.
Yep. That is not the question. I had another answer lined up, and I'm glad I didn't buzz in. I was going to go with Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Oh, okay. That I would have known about, because then I would have wanted an N-Gage. That's how into Tony Hawk I was at the time.
So, Neil, the board is yours.
All right, so we got... I need to scroll up and find wherever the fuck they are.
You have Birds of a Feather. There's four left there. Social Studies hasn't been touched, and Mario Kart hasn't been touched.
Let's do Social Studies for 200.
Cool. Upon arriving in your hometown in Animal Crossing New Leaf, you unceremoniously assume this governmental role.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is mayor?
Correct. Nice try, Nathan, though. That almost tripped me.
I think we should have just asked him.
He doesn't strike me as someone who would lie. If he says he's first, he's first.
Let's go for 400 in that category.
Okay. In Little King's Story, you preside over this form of governance.
Woohoo!
What is monarchy?
Correct.
Like, I was like, what's the trick? 800 or whatever's next?
Yep. In Atlas's recent Citizens of the Earth, you play as this character whose superpower allows him to break congressional ties. Or Andy.
What is Vice President of the World?
Correct.
Let's just keep going.
That game got a good update. I haven't played it much since
then.
Does it
actually work now?
But I think it's way more fun.
Is it actually good? Before, right?
It was really fun. It was just super, super laggy, and the Wii U version. Yeah, the Wii U version was very... The Wii U version crashed a lot, and the 3DS one just ran very slowly.
Oh.
Okay. Alright, so for 1600, Raised by Frogs, everybody is surprised when mild-membered party member Mallow turns out to be one of these in Super Mario RPG. Alright, boop, boop, boop.
What?
No, no, Neil, too All late, right. too late. It is, what is a prince?
He's a prince. Really? Okay. I thought it was like the Nimbus or the cloud people.
Yeah, but
I see what you're
prince,
saying, Zach. A marshmallow is not a form of government.
Right.
Exactly.
All right.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Remember, he's raised by the toads, but then he eventually goes home and find out he's a
prince. Yeah, no, that was dumb of me because I was like, what's the name of the race that he was from? Not thinking like, oh no, he's just a fucking prince.
Yeah.
Let's finish that up.
Okay, so for 2000, in Metal Gear Solid 3D, Snake is congratulated by this U.S. president at the end of his mission. All right, boop, boop, boop. Who is Lyndon Johnson? Or
that's what I was kind of thinking. Yeah. Yeah. That or the president from Bad Dudes?
President Ronnie?
Yeah.
So right, we got Birds of a Feather and...
And Mario Kart.
All right.
Of course, you're not going to touch Mario Kart. Big surprise. Yeah. Biased.
is there a point value for 7.5?
That's what you'd give the category.
Oh, you took my joke.
Tobias, the board is yours.
Birds of a Feather for 400. Don't pester these farm birds in Zelda. They get real mean real fast. Neil.
What is Cuco?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Me. Sorry, Nathan. Send me in, coach.
600 in that category.
800.
Okay. Okay. Damn.
It's the second unlockable character in the original Gunman Clive.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is Duck?
Yes, Duck.
I should have known that.
The game's great awesome. Game.
Playing as the Duck is hard.
1600?
Yeah.
You did it. Finally.
Espresso, one of the original animal buddies in DKC, is this kind of bird.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is an ostrich?
Yup.
Then let's close it out.
Sky of the Shantae games practices this sport, which employs predatory birds. Yeah, go from ostrich to this. what is falconry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I knew it was something dumb like that, but I couldn't remember what it was.
You have to go to Mario Kart now, Neil.
Mario Kart.
Real quick, let's do a scoring update before we do this last category. Neil is at 12,900.
Oh my god.
Andy is at 8,300. And Nathan is at -700.
Variety.
But I feel like this is Nathan's category. I feel like this is he's coming
back too.
Here.
I do too.
As someone who never plays Mario Kart, I feel strongly about this.
Okay, Neil, you want to start with 200?
Yeah.
All right. This is what you sent Neil on the internet after you read his Mario Kart or 8 review. No, I'm just kidding. That's not the question. But the answer would have been death threat. Yeah. So
I buzzed
200.
In for that.
I did too.
This character was a racer on the SNES version, but has not appeared since.
Woohoo!
Oh, jeez. What is Donkey Kong Jr.?
Yep.
Oh, dang it.
Donkey Kong.
It's a person. But isn't there, like, some, like, dumb canon debate about how, like, well, Donkey Kong Jr. became Donkey Kong in Mario Kart 64?
No, it's not a debate at all. Incorrect.
Just wait until the Donkey Kong Historia, guys. Yeah. Then you'll all be laughing.
Well,
Neil, I'm sad that you've let that idea linger.
I'll be doing
Frankie
something.
Is Donkey Kong's grandpa. Who's his dad?
Donkey Kong Jr.
Oh,
Mario?
Mario!
Because Cranky Kong is the original Donkey Kong. And you see what happens is there is a certain point in which I believe that humanity dies. Because that's why
Mario
you see the ruins.
Mario fucks candy, and that's when Donkey Kong is
Yeah.
That scene has been cut out of the Wii U Virtual Console version of the game, so it's not canon anymore.
All
right, Neil. They spun it off into an entire Vitality Sensor game.
Yeah, back then we're never going to see it because everyone was like, oh, look at him on his dumb face.
It's called Sleepy Kong.
Neil, you want to go for 400?
Yeah, why not?
It is the original name of the dreaded blue shell.
Woohoo!
Neil.
What is the spiky shell?
Incorrect.
Ooh.
You have points to spare, though, so I think you're fine.
Nathan!
Nathan!
No, I just... No.
Come on, Nathan. You can
Nathan's
do it.
Nathan's trolling.
Let's look, because I want you to get to positive, so you at least can play in the final round.
Well, then that is not the way to accomplish it.
Neil was very close. Does that help? He may have just been
a little
off.
You okay, Zach?
Nathan, I'll give you a hint.
No.
I'll give you a hint.
Zach was actually just coughing in Morse code to give you the answer. Did you catch it?
Two taps, one tap.
Nathan, what does Lakitu throw?
No.
God.
All right, the answer is, what is the spiny shell?
Damn it.
I thought you had that for sure, because we just talked about spiny shells during the Smash Brothers video we recorded.
Yeah.
One of the games had spiny shells in it. And I was like, oh, I didn't know those were called spiny shells. I thought they were called the fucking worst. Neil, though, the board is yours.
Giant
I guess,
blue asshole.
I guess 600? 800? I don't fucking know. All
right, here we go. Getting 3 stars on every cup and every difficulty wins you this character in Mario Kart Wii. Andy.
What is me?
Incorrect.
God damn it.
All right. Boop, boop, boop. Who is Dry Bowser?
Okay. I was thinking that or Rosalina.
Oh, yeah.
Then what do we got? Let's do the 2001.
Oh.
Change it up.
Here we go. Players without a copy of Mario Kart Advance could only pick this character in multiplayer races.
How?
Wait, no. You know what? No. Nathan.
Well, who is Shy Guy?
No.
What?
It, Nathan.
Cool.
Was that... Never mind.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the answer is no.
That was in the DS one was when that started.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Fuck it.
Neil.
What is Yoshi?
Correct.
Yep.
Oh my god.
You encouraged me to answer.
I'm so sorry. Neil, were you going to say Shy Guy?
Yes.
Oh, that sucks. Oh, I'm sorry. My god. I was like, I'm going to help Nathan get to positive right now. You seem so sure. Dang it.
I am pretty sure you started saying Shy Guy.
I know.
I heard him say Shy, and I'm like, oh, great. I'm definitely going to get it right.
I'd say I didn't even hear that.
Jesus.
Well, that sucks. All right, here we go. Last question. If Nathan happens to get it, it's worth triple points for him.
Yes.
So for 1600, Shinobu Tanaka composed the music for Double Dash, Mario Kart DS, and this mainline Mario game. All right, boop, boop, boop. What is Super Mario Sunshine?
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense, because there's this weird shit with Mario Kart where, like, the Mario Kart team that we know of, pretty much none of them worked on Double Dash. Like, it was a completely different team. It's really weird.
Yeah. All right, so that brings us to Final Jeopardy. So here's our final score update heading into that. Neil has 14,700 points. Andy has 7,500 points, but it means if you double up, you could actually beat Neil. So at least we've got that going. Nathan has negative 2,700. I feel like we should just make that positive 2,700.
Can you put the scores in the chat so that way I can base my.
Yeah,
we could make this Mario Party Jeopardy and just Nathan wins anyway.
Yeah, let's roll the dice.
You get the most. Yeah. You get the least. Have the least stars. You win. All right. So you know how this works. I'll give you the category, then you send Scott your wagers, and once that's done, I'll read the answer. Category is Ocarina of Time.
All right, I've got everyone's wager.
Okay, so the question is, this boss of the Shadow Temple is clearly inspired by a similar boss from Super Mario 64.
right, here we go. We will start with Nathan because he was at the lowest. Is that how it goes? Yeah, right.
No, you're not reading my answer.
Okay.
Go ahead. Sure.
Well, you got it right.
Because I Googled it.
Did you?
Oh my god.
Because I put -2700 as my wager. I just was trolling you.
I was so excited. I was going to say you got to zero.
No.
All right. Well, then I won't even read Nathan's answer.
Good.
Andy bet all his money, and his answer was, who is Zach Miller? Which is close. Zach was actually the boss of the Water Temple. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Neil bet 301 points and had the correct answer. What is Bongo Bongo?
Okay, what's the similar boss in Mario 64? Because that threw me off. I just
in the desert level, it's that dude with hands, with eyes.
Okay, because I was like the Shadow Temple. I think that was the first iteration of that character where use the arrow, shoot his hands. Like,
to use the arrow, sure, but in Mario, you just punch him in the eye.
Look, if you want to ask me to name bosses from the original Legend of Zelda or Zelda 2, I'm set. If it's not Twin Rova, I don't have any recollection.
I just remember that Bongo Bongo is a dumb name.
It is, and he's a stupid boss.
Do you guys want to know what the original final question would have been?
Sure.
Just for fun, we changed it. The category was licensed games.
Kind of a poor category name, I think.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really give any indication. And
the category is most games.
And then the answer, quote unquote, was he's the big bad in the video game adaptation of The Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh my god.
Wow. Nope.
That's a Zach question, right?
Exactly, and that's exactly what I was like. I think the only person who played that game.
My response would have been the same.
Is it the lizard, or did they change it up?
Alistair Smith.
Okay.
You rescue the lizard in the video game adaptation, which takes place in an alternate universe after the first movie.
There you go. So Neil is our big winner. He finished with 15,000 and 1 points.
Jeez.
Andy wound up at zero, so worth all this time, I'm sure.
So that means Nathan tied him.
No, Nathan's disqualified, and we'll never speak his name again.
Cheater. You invite me back for a crusty old RPG Jeopardy.
Okay. We can make that happen.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Cool. Well, there you go. Well, thanks, guys, for coming on to compete.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will talk to you guys later.
Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, everyone, then that will do it for episode 175 of Connectivity. As always, you can send your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't done that yet. We really appreciate it. And, stay tuned for a couple weeks when the show comes back with Nick and Neil sort of headlining it. And I guess, personally, I just want to thank everyone who has listened to the show over the past, 4 years, I guess, that I have been appearing on it. It means a whole lot to me. I've made a lot of great friends from doing this show. And I will definitely miss being a part of it every week. But I'll be back. You know, there'll be segments I come back on in a little while. So, yeah, just thank you. Thank you so much for listening and being a part of it, writing emails, you know, following me on Twitter, just even listening, even if I never even talk to you. It really means a lot. So thanks a lot. Talk to you guys later.